my God, what a bunch of windbags.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Thursday, February 29th, 2024. This is your award-winning Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 1638.
This is No Agenda.
Enjoying a free extra day and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where we're all enjoying Leap Day, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
I believe this is a first. I think this is the first time we've ever had a show on Leap Day.
It's possible. It can only happen once every 4 years, and it had to be a coincidence that one day of the week, Thursday or Sunday, has to fall on that day. So someone out there could do the calculation on the statistical probability.
Yeah.
Probably. It could be.
As far as I can remember, this is the first time ever. But it's very enjoyable. You know, it feels like it. So how many shows have we had in this month? Well, let me check. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This will be the 9th show this month.
Huh.
I mean, that's value for value right there.
Oh, we're giving people their money's worth.
I think so.
Especially considering the money.
Yeah. Reminder, we are a value for value program, which means you can support us with your time, talents, and treasure, noagendadonations.com. But first, there's something we weren't realizing. Well, actually, we know war is good for business. This we know. We know that COVID was good for business. It was bad for people's health, but good for business. We printed up a lot of money and put a lot of money into the States, and everybody got lots of money, especially into the States. And so now the cat is kind of out of the bag. Victoria Nuland admitted it. It's in the New York Times, in the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post. Everyone's trying to tell you, hey, you really, this money for Ukraine, it's not really for Ukraine. It's for us. Have you noticed an uptick in this? Narrative?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's for us, even though we make a tank here and pay workers to make the tank and then ship the tank off for free to Ukraine.
Right. I have a feeling that this is really the only thing that's keeping our country in business at all.
Well, that and money laundering.
Well, let's listen to a bit of the money laundering scam from a Democrat, who, of course, is a warmonger from Colorado, Representative Jason Crow.
But let's also talk about how this bill is structured and how it provides that support. It provides that support by spending over half of the money right here in the United States.
Woo!
To U.S. businesses and U.S. workers from places like Texas and North Carolina and Pennsylvania and Colorado, all throughout this nation, who will be building the equipment and supplies that we'll be sending to our military. That's another important part of this.
Oh.
Our military sends our old equipment to Ukraine.
Junk.
And Ukraine uses it with great effect on the battlefield.
Yeah, we can tell.
Then the new stuff is kept by our military.
Oh.
So let's break this down.
Please, break it down.
We're supporting our economy. We're protecting our 100,000 troops. We're ensuring a stable and prosperous Europe. We're defeating the Russian military. We're ensuring food supplies. We're updating our own military stocks. We're infusing money in the U.S. defense industrial base and to our own workers and businesses. And we're doing all of this for less than 5% of our annual defense budget.
So new term, military industrial base. Instead of saying complex, we say base. And I don't know what that even means. Military industrial base. Is that the base of all of our industry? I guess so. But here's what I found out.
By the way, that number he threw out at the end is bogus.
Oh, it's much more than 5%, I presume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is the beauty. I didn't realize it until I came across this report from Turkish Radio Television, who I'm liking more and more these days. This war, this so-called war, is allowing us to soak and screw the entire European Union. We're soaking them for hundreds of billions of dollars.
Since the start of the Ukrainian war, industrial production in the U.S. defense and space sector has increased by 17.5%. European governments, including Poland, Germany, and other NATO Eastern Flank countries, have placed orders worth billions of dollars. Their shopping list includes fighter jets, helicopters, tanks, and other hardware. In 2023, spending by European countries went up by 13% to $345 billion, almost a third higher than a decade ago. Poland, $30 billion orders for Apache helicopters, high mobility artillery rocket system HIMARS, M1 A1 Abrams tanks, and other hardware from the US. Germany will spend over $20 billion to buy 35 US-made F-35 fighter jets and 60 Chinook helicopters and related equipment, as it ramps up military spending from $50 billion in 2021 to over $100 billion in 2022, following Russia's war in Ukraine. Romania's government increased its 2024 defense budget by almost 45% over 2023, reaching roughly $20.8 billion to accommodate major weapons purchase from the U.S. This surge in demand has created thousands of jobs, and production lines have spread across 40 U.S. states.
40!
But the economic benefits are not limited to the defense industry.
But wait, there's more!
The U.S. has become the world's largest exporter of liquefied natural gas. The disruption of Russian gas supplies has meant Europe has turned to America for its gas. This has led to significant investments in new LNG projects, boosting the U.S. economy even further. Foreign direct investment in the U.S. has seen a nearly 50% increase, with European companies attracted by the access to cheap and abundant energy.
Woo! It's a bonanza!
Okay.
I didn't realize this. I didn't realize that all that money they were, we're sending money to Ukraine. No, you're not. You're sending it to us. This is great.
So here, yeah. Let's listen to some more, a less histrionic analysis
okay.
of how much money's actually being spent.
Are you going to bum me out now?
I don't know if it's going to bum you out or not. But I don't believe anything that guy said.
Oh, wow.
Can see why you'd like it. It's a great clip. But let's listen to Al Jazeera, who looks at these things, probably since they're not that involved in this war as Turkey is. And Turkey's trying to humiliate the EU all the time.
Yes.
Let's listen to this clip is the Ukraine war, and it has contributions.
I want to take a quick look at this point at the contributions that we've been seeing from different countries. Obviously, Western powers, as we've been talking about, have been heavily supporting Ukraine's war effort. Let's look at some of those numbers. Now, Kyiv's received around $270 billion worth of aid, including military, financial, and humanitarian support. The biggest donor is the United States. It's given more than $75 billion over the past 2 years. And a new aid package, as we've been talking about, worth around $60 billion, is, though, currently stalled in U.S. Congress. Western powers have also given Ukraine advanced weaponry, including tanks, fighter jets, and anti-aircraft weapons. Looking at European contributions, Germany, that was, what, more than $19 billion worth, UK, $9.8 billion. France, I was interested to see, is $686 million.
Wow.
So it's pretty bold of Macron to talk about needing to do more when they're that far behind in contributions, isn't it, Ioana?
Well, according to the Kiel Institute, which is tracking the public contributions, because, of course, some of the contributions may not always be public. Indeed, France is in 14th place after, indeed, as you said, the United States, Germany, which is the biggest European contributor, the UK, Poland, many others. So everybody is contributing, but I fully agree that everybody needs to do more because this is an existential moment.
Oh, the French, man. The frogs are no good. They're not ponying up.
Well, Macron's the big, this evolved from a conversation about Macron saying he's going to send troops.
I have the clip.
Many Western nations have done far more than France to help Ukraine, but France is certainly the first to float the idea of putting boots on the ground.
French boots.
Even if President Macron stressed there are no plans or agreements to do so.
Il n'y a pas de consensus aujourd'hui pour envoyer...
There is no consensus today to officially, openly, and with endorsement send troops to Ukraine. But in terms of dynamics, nothing should be ruled out. We'll do everything necessary to ensure that Russia cannot win this war.
The comments came after a hastily convened summit of Ukrainian allies called in the shadow of Russian military advances.
We should not rule out the need for security that justifies some elements of deployment, but I've told you very clearly what France maintains as its position, which is a strategic ambiguity that I stand by.
I think most of Europe is saying, hey, send Pierre, man. That's fine by me.
No, actually, they're all saying, no, you can't do it. Don't do it. You're going to get us all in trouble.
Did you see what Scholz did, the German chancellor?
What?
He blocked the Taurus missiles. Yeah, no,
they don't want to get NATO involved in a boots on the ground. This is just Macron's in trouble politically. He throws this out there. He's not going to give him any more than the $480 million or whatever cheap-ass amount of money he's contributed. And so he makes this bull crap. Yeah, that wouldn't happen in a million years.
Here's Scholz.
Chancellor Olaf Scholz says Berlin will not supply Ukraine with long-range Taurus cruise missiles. Now, Scholz cited the missile's extreme range and the fact that it would not be possible for Germany to remotely monitor target control. Taurus missiles can hit targets up to 500 kilometers away. And Scholz said the missile's deployment could increase the risk of Germany becoming involved in the war.
Yeah, no kidding. You can't trust Zelensky with that.
No.
He'll be sending it into Moscow. How far is Moscow? How many kilometers is Moscow?
Well, we had that on the show before. I think it's less than 500 miles.
Yeah, so this is... No, you can't give that to that guy. That's no good.
No, of course not. They just send them all to Moscow.
So now we have Yulia Navalnaya, because you have to say add the A at the end. So she is now the new spokesmodel for war. And so after her appearance at the Munich Security Conference, where the news broke, the coincidence is amazing, she goes to Brussels. Now, there's a problem with Yulia. Her English is really, really not good enough to sound forceful. She has the right look. You know, and she got the cool bell-bottom pants on, which is very modern. With the so she's got, I mean, the hair tied back, everything. It's all the right look, but it's not quite hitting home with the accent.
Yulia Navalnaya told the bloc's elected representatives her husband Alexei was murdered on the orders of Russian President Vladimir Putin.
On his orders, Alexei was tortured for 3 years. He was starved in a tiny stone cell. Cut off from the outside world and denied visits, phone calls, and then even letters. And then they killed him.
Oh, no.
The Kremlin continues to deny those allegations. She said Russian authorities delayed the release of his body, and she worries people attending the funeral on Friday would be arrested. She told the parliament that despite sanctions and despite the donated weapons, ammunition and money for Ukraine, Putin's invasion continues and his grip on power at home is stronger than ever.
You cannot hurt Putin with another resolution or another set of sanctions.
It's no good.
That is no different from the previous ones. You cannot defeat him by thinking he is a man of principle who has morals and rules. He is not like that. And Alexei realized that a long time ago. You are not dealing with a politician, but with a bloody monster.
A bloody monster. A bloody monster.
Yeah, your point is well taken.
Yeah. Now, here's what's interesting. So first, the guy in Ukraine, the HUR chief, HUR is the intelligence, main director of intelligence of Ukraine's Ministry of Defense. Kirilo Budanov came out and said, quote, "I may disappoint you, but as far as we know, Alexei Navalny died of result of a blood clot." This is not from the vax. Well, that's
what they don't throw in.
And even crazier, they were teeing up to exchange him for some Russian guy.
Now, an ally of Alexei Navalny, the deceased Russian opposition politician, says Navalny was close to being freed at the time of his death. In a YouTube video, Maria Pevchik says there had been plans for Navalny to be exchanged for a Russian hitman who's been held in a German jail. Talks were apparently in the final stages when he died. Pevchik also repeated her allegation that President Vladimir Putin is responsible for Navalny's death.
Now, why would Putin do that? If he was a bargaining chip and wanted to exchange him, why would he kill him?
He wouldn't. It doesn't make any logical sense. This is just all part of the anti-Putin. Everything's Putin, including the...
everybody.
Putin. Everything going on over here is all Putin. The Hunter Biden investigation is all Putin.
Putin.
It is. I mean, if you listen to these, I don't have the clip. Unfortunately, I should have got it. It's just a wrap-up clip from every Democrat congressman saying it's Putin is behind this. It's Russian disinformation.
We're back to that. You know, it makes sense. You know who's back? Scary Poppins is back. Nina Jankovic. You remember her?
Vaguely.
So she shows up. I'll do a little intro clip here from this is NPR.
New Hampshire voters heard a familiar voice on the other end of a robocall last month telling them not to vote in the upcoming Democratic presidential primary.
It's important that you save your vote for the November election. We'll need your help in electing Democrats up and down the ticket. Voting this Tuesday only enables the Republicans in their quest to elect Donald Trump again. Your vote makes a difference in November, not this Tuesday.
That sure sounds like President Joe Biden, right down to his trademark malarkey earlier in the call. But it's actually a deep fake that used AI to mimic Biden's voice to try to illegally suppress voting and disrupt the New Hampshire primary. Nina Jankowicz is vice president at the Center for Information Resilience. And in a new piece she wrote for Foreign Affairs, she argues that we're about to be bombarded with disinformation like that ahead of the 2024 election. And she says the U.S. government has really given up trying to fight it.
So I look up this Center for Information Resilience.
I'm already laughing.
And I love how it says about us. The Center for Information Resilience is an independent, nonprofit social enterprise dedicated to exposing human rights abuses and war crimes, countering disinformation, and combating online behavior harmful to women and minorities. Our projects in Myanmar, Ukraine, and Afghanistan are at the forefront of efforts to investigate and document human rights abuses. Now, this is what's interesting. This is a certified members of Social Enterprise UK organization. So, and it even has a picture of London on the front. But then in this, how are you funded? Well, this is very interesting. We have no core funding. We receive funding for individual projects that support our organizational objectives, blah, 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 blah. For instance, the Myanmar Witness Project is supported by grants from UK's Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office and Australia's Department for Foreign Affairs and Trade. Like other charities and nonprofits who receive government and multilateral support, these funds go directly towards delivering our project work. Are you funded by any governments? Why, yes. We have received grants from the UK government, Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office, the US State Department, USAID, and Australia's Department for Foreign Affairs and Trade. So this is just another governmental organization or non-governmental organization that she's weaseled herself into. And I'm sure that they'll be releasing reports and making noise, and maybe they even get to do stuff you know, combat mis and disinformation, because this is what it's going to be.
You know, I think we're more vulnerable now than we have been at any time in the past 10 years. And I'm including 2016 and kind of the deluge of Russian disinformation that we saw at that time. We are in an extremely partisan, politicized environment when it comes to disinformation. And so all of the good work that was built up since 2016 to push back on disinformation, whether it was coming from foreign entities or domestic entities, is now being labeled as censorship, which it's frankly not. That's a bold-faced lie.
Oh.
So the kind of playing field is open.
So taking people down and taking accounts off of social media is not censorship. It's a bold-faced lie.
Is now being labeled as censorship, which it's frankly not. That's a bold-faced lie.
No, when it's coming from a nonprofit or a non-governmental organization, you're correct. It is not directly censorship.
So the kind of playing field is open for anybody who wants to get involved there. And I'm talking about foreign entities. You know, I think Russia certainly has a lot to be meddling for, both with, you know, regard to the war in Ukraine, but also I think it's clear that they will prefer a Trump presidency over a Biden presidency in the future and will probably be gunning for that.
Oh.
But we also have a wide array of domestic...
You don't know that.
In fact, Putin said exactly the opposite. He's on record saying he prefers Biden over Trump.
Will prefer a Trump presidency over a Biden presidency in the future and will probably be gunning for that. But we also have a wide array of domestic disinformers across the political spectrum who are spreading lies for power and for profit.
Lies for power and for profit and for podcasts. Yes, podcast power and profit. Our neighbor spoke about this very system, and she spoke quite eloquently. I'm talking about Laura Logan right down the road here. She was in Washington, D.C. for the Ron Johnson roundtable, which, you know, it's so he gets a lot of good people in these roundtables, and they do it in some side meeting room of the Capitol. C-SPAN. Yeah. C-SPAN doesn't cover it. You know, they run repeats of the Nixon presidency. Like, oh, we're not going to cover that. You know, they had Malone was there, and O'Dowd about the excess deaths, and Del Bigtree, and Laura Logan. She spoke, and then she was asked by Senator Johnson about the censorship issue with nonprofits, and she answered quite eloquently.
Thank you, Ms. Logan. We only have a few seconds. You said you've been targeted over the last 10 years. Can you describe what precipitated your targeting?
Yes, reporting the truth about Benghazi. I was attacked by one of those NGOs that masquerades as a nonpartisan watchdog. In violation of its 501(c) status, it occupies a highly partisan position. I'm talking about Media Matters for America. I'm sure there's many doctors in this room, scientists who've been attacked by the same people. The same people that run that, David Brock, for example, another political assassin, now runs an organization called Facts First USA, which is designed to make sure that your research, Dr. Hazan, never reaches the people or the public. There are other organizations like Defeat Disinfo, which claims to be a PAC that goes after disinformation, particularly set up to target COVID and throughout COVID with General Stanley McChrystal and the other people that advise that organization. But what, you know, Senator Johnson, it's not a secret that these organizations exist. What is not widely known and talked about is that it's paid for by us. It's paid for by the taxpayers in your omnibus spending bills that get shoved through the House and the Senate against the will of the people of this country. There are cutouts for these NGOs. And what they do is they launder this money. They pass it from one NGO to the next. And in the name of preventing the spread of disinformation, they censor, silence, intimidate, and punish. I said that this is a death sentence for journalists. It's how you murder a journalist without killing them.
Yeah, this of course is a good point she's making. How USAID gives money to these big NGOs, and the NGOs, they then give away a lot of that money to all these weird organizations.
Yeah,
it's a perfect system. And I mean, if we want to talk about disinformation, man, you had a great rant over email when someone sent us this New York Times article about the secret CIA bases in Ukraine.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about propaganda. Right down to, well, this is how we know that the Russians shot down the Malaysian airliner. And I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, this was a long piece. It was in the New York Times. I think it's been going around. It's obviously written by the CIA to, for whatever purposes. It's got just loaded with material. And it's transparently a bogus article, but it was given one of those huge, massive treatments. Very long piece, yeah. About 5,000 words.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I got irked by it when you guys sent it.
You were.
I said, look at this. Oh, this is an eye-opener. Listen, so I read it. See, it's an eye-opener, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, gee. You mean, it's interesting. You mean, we've been in there since 2014? Really? No, you don't say. I wonder how that started. Could it be with cookies? Cookies? Victoria Nuland cookies on the Maidan?
Yeah, and don't forget, Brennan was there.
Brennan, yes. He's back again, Brennan. I saw him.
Yeah, he just got back. For some reason, they pushed him back out there. I don't know why.
He's not saying anything interesting, unfortunately.
No, and he's annoying. He's not like he's not personable. He's not a good spokesperson.
No, but
he just seems like a creep.
He doesn't have gems like this.
People are innocent until, alleged to be involved in some type of criminal activity.
Yes. I mean, those are the all-time gems.
Classic.
Those are the gems we want. Yeah, we want that stuff. No, it's just annoying. There's nothing good coming out about him. I don't know why. It's odd.
So I wanted to, I sent a bonus clip because I wanted to introduce a topic so we could all follow it.
Okay.
Which is I am what I say you are,
wat je zegt ben jezelf met je kop door de helft.
Which is a great phrase in Dutch.
Yes, you are what you say I am.
So I didn't want to do this at all. I mean, that's why I sent the bonus clip. Because this bonus clip is between 3 and 5 years old, I think.
Oh.
It's hard to say because it showed up on TikTok as part of a reiteration. They're starting to reiterate.
It's a classic bonus clip.
It's a classic bonus clip. But they're reiterating some of this bull crap that has never caught on.
Uh-huh.
And this started with, and what they're doing is they're finding the foibles of Biden and starting to project them on Trump.
Oh, and so, okay, that's good.
And they're doing it consistently. And it started with Jen Psaki and others going, Biden and Trump are the same age.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Okay, first of all, they're not the same age, and they're not even in the same generation. It's only a short difference. It's like 4 years difference in age, I believe, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But
In those regions, yeah. The difference between 77 and 81?
81, yeah.
It makes a difference. I think it makes a difference. Although, if I can just say, Richard Lewis dead at 76?
Vax.
That feels, now it was Parkinson's. He got Parkinson's.
He was a wreck.
That feels bad. Anyway. That just feels bad. It doesn't feel right. Sorry.
So, I've always, okay, well, I don't want to get into Richard Lewis, but so they're starting to do this. So they started with, they're the same age. They're not the same age. They're not the same generation. That's which is even more important than the age. Then what triggered me to get this clip discuss it a little bit was a article in Microsoft Start. Microsoft has this page that they throw at you every chance they get on. You have Windows 11.
I have Windows 11.
Anti-Trump propaganda.
Why don't I have Start? Why don't I get this propaganda?
Do you have a little weather bug in the left-hand corner of your screen?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, if you click on that, boom, it opens it up. You can't help it.
Oh.
So, but there's a lot of anti-Trump stuff, and the thing that caught my attention was Trump analysis of such and such speech shows Trump's mental decline, obvious mental decline, and this is all the stuff that they're talking about with Biden.
Yes.
So this piece that comes out, and I did a little research on it, and there was an incident, I think it was in 2020, where somebody photoshopped Trump on the golf course, which is why they they don't let anyone near the golf courses when he's golfing anymore. You don't see too many pictures of Trump golfing.
No, because he looks fat.
Because somebody photoshopped some shit on his pants, claiming he crapped himself while he was on the golf course.
Classic.
And even Snopes. People should look it up because the photo's quite funny. And well done. But
it's
even
AI.
Snopes.
It's AI, man.
It's not even AI. I mean, this is pre-AI. With AI, it's going to be better. So we end up with stuff like this particular clip, which is this was triggered, I believe, by Adam Kissinger, who is an asshole.
Oh, man, you're just on fire today.
Ex-Democrat who in December, I think around just before Christmas, came on one podcast or another and discussed how Trump stinks to high heaven. So if you're around, I've never heard this before, but. And you'd think that after years on The Apprentice, 4 years in office, still floating around, that somebody besides Adam Kissinger, who I don't believe even shook hands with Trump ever, why would he? I think it's just a lie. And I think this other thing, which I'm playing now, is I think where a lot of this stems from. They're trying to ignite this meme, which just doesn't make any sense.
He would often soil himself on The Apprentice set. He's incontinent from all the speed, all the Adderall he does, the cocaine that he's done for decades. You know, all that stuff has a laxative and it has an effect on your bowels, and his are uncontrollable. He's worn diapers since probably the 90s, but I saw it firsthand in the 2000s on Celebrity Apprentice in late 2000s, and we'd have to stop the show and change him, you know, and that was Keith Schiller's job. He would take him off set, he would wipe him down. Our nickname for Keith was Wet Wipes.
Comedian and former Trump worker Noel Kassler spilled the beans to Midas Touch.
He'll also do it in a rage, and this is where it gets really drug-related. He'll start to freak out. You know, one time there was the word arbitrage on a cue card, and he started screaming that the script department was setting him up. You're setting me up! And he just freaked out and then very loudly evacuated his bowels.
Wow. This is, you know what? I don't care. I don't care what time in the show it is. You're getting clip of the day right off the bat. Yeah.
Clip of the day.
It's been a while. How can we not have had this clip before? This is great news.
So couple of things. First of all, that he'd get upset by the word arbitrage. Anyone is involved in negotiations or anything like that. That word is a common word to be used by people in finance.
I thought for a moment that Trump had was going to read it as arbit rage, and that's why he got mad, but that's not where the clip went. But yes, arbitrage, of course.
Yeah, so that's not going to upset anybody. The second thing is that Adderall and cocaine do not cause incontinence, where it causes constipation, if anything, if you do some research and look it up. So that's just a basic lie. So this guy comes out of the blue with this, and here's why it's ludicrous, is because, first of all, we've never heard of this before, this guy, and before Adam Kissinger, his last name is eluding me.
Yes.
Before these two boneheads, and you'd think that all those years of The Apprentice show, that some contestant or somebody, even though you sign non-disclosures when you do these shows, you'd think somebody would say something about this. And then he goes 4 years of the presidency where they're going after him tooth and nail with everything they've got, Russian conspiracies, bad phone calls, you name it. And this doesn't come up. And now it comes up just before the election and has been reintroduced. They're trying to. But again, this comes up along with we're seeing a mental decline in Trump in his speeches. We're seeing this. We're seeing that. This is, again, that Dutch phrase being, mm-hmm. Applying perfectly mm-hmm. to what's going on. And people just have to. This is the lowest that you can go for the Democrat Party.
Sure they can. No, they can go lower. Come on.
They might be able to go lower, but I don't know what it's going to be.
Lower
He's
going
to have to eat babies.
So Joe Biden went into Walter Reed, and when he came out of Walter Reed, I only found one clip with video. Dude, that is not Joe Biden. I think the key now is the aviators. When he's wearing the aviators, you got to pay attention to his gait. This was not not Joe Biden, the president. This was someone else. He comes strolling out. He's got his aviators on. Even his face looks just tighter, tighter. You know, maybe it was a mask. I don't know. But and then the answers for the press were hilarious.
The oldest president in U.S. history left Walter Reed National Military Medical Center triumphant after a 2.5-hour routine physical examination.
I'm triumphant.
Doctor handed down a verdict of fit for duty. Cognitive tests are not usually included in such examinations, and the White House rebuked any suggestion that this would be necessary.
The president's doctor has said, if you look at what this president, the president who is also the commander-in-chief, he passes a cognitive test every day, as he moves from one topic to another topic, understanding the granular level of these topics.
This after polling showed that
that's proof. He goes from one topic to the next topic. That's just proof. He knows what he's doing. He knows he's on another topic.
76% of U.S. voters have misgivings about the president's age in the run-up to the 2024 presidential race. A recent report exonerating Joe Biden over the possession of classified documents after leaving office in 2017.
Blah, blah. And then I got two clips from his NBC Seth Meyers appearance. I've got to wonder if this was also the other Biden. We just call him Dark Brandon. I think is the other Biden is Dark Brandon. I mean, did you watch that interview?
I watched part of it. I was going to get some clips from it, but for some reason I didn't.
Yeah, good. I got two.
Yeah, I'm glad you got some.
Yeah, here we go.
It does seem as though democracy, in vague terms, somehow is not easy for us to grasp. Having dealt with dictators, what do you see in a world where democracy is actually at risk in a way it might be in this election?
The first thing they do, dictators do, is they disregard whatever the rule of law is. They just disregard it. Here's the guy who says he thinks he can change the Constitution and ignore it. Just ignore portions of the Constitution. Here's the guy who talks about retribution. Here's the guy. Look, you have the guys, the thousands of people who stormed the Capitol. They're insurrectionists. Two cops died. Other people were badly hurt. And what did he say?
Listen to these lies.
They got convicted and or they pled guilty. And he said they're patriots. God, patriots. And he says he's going to forgive them all. Every one of them is going to be released. That's what happens in Eastern European countries. That's not what happens in America.
No, in Eastern European countries is what you did to them. This was interesting. He mixes it up. In Eastern European countries, they don't let people go. Am I misunderstanding?
It's a great point.
Yeah, it's nuts. And then he puts his foot in it with this one.
Again, you seem like an optimistic person. You believe maybe there's a future for a two-state solution. But from where I'm sitting, it does seem like there doesn't seem to be any appetite for that right now. Do you see what is... Because, again, we see this horrible... Every day, we see these horrible images out of Gaza. And... is there a path forward? Is there a safe future for the people who live there?
There is a path forward with difficulty, but here's the path forward. Look, first of all, the hostages being held must be released. And then we've got some principal agreement. There'll be a ceasefire while that takes place. Ramadan's coming up, and there's been an agreement by the Israelis that they would not engage in activities during Ramadan as well, in order to give us time to get all the hostages out. That gives us...
You know, just listening to this, you're right. But you say being yourself, who's on coke or speed here? That's this guy.
Time to get all the hostages out. That gives us time to begin to move in directions that a lot of Arab countries are prepared to move in. For example, Saudi Arabia is ready to recognize Israel. Jordan is Egypt. There's six other states. I've been working with Qatar. And the bottom line is that I think the only way Israel ultimately survives, and I make no bones about it, I get criticized for having said a long time ago, you need not be a Jew to be a Zionist. I'm a Zionist. Were there no Israel, there's not a Jew in the world to be safe.
No one briefed him. That was not a good idea to say that. That's like third rail. I'm a Zionist.
Well, he's right about that. He's right about the fact that he has said that.
Yes, he has.
And it's been recorded. So I'm not sure why he felt the need to say it.
Because he's nuts.
So he is nuts.
And but the anti-Trump stuff is great. I mean, it's back to 2015. I mean, bring on Reverend Al Sharpton, please.
I repeat, the insult of saying that black voters would in some way be enticed to support him because he had a mugshot, like all of us are criminals, or to say that because he has four indictments, one of which, or really two of which, both Georgia and the federal around him trying to rob votings when we had to fight. People were bloodied, beaten, and killed to get us the right to vote. And one person, one of his supporters, got on Fox News saying, blacks love him because of the sneakers. So let me get this right. He didn't support George Floyd Justice and the Policing Act, Biden did, and signed an executive order. He didn't support the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. But we supposed to go for sneakers and a mugshot. And those blacks that are standing there with him, have you no shame? That does it for me. Thanks for watching.
Oh, Al is so great. Let's listen to the black sneaker guy.
Even the sneaker thing. I was on social media last night.
I don't think this guy's black, by the way.
Very interesting. As you see, black support eroding from Joe Biden. This is connecting with black America because they love sneakers. They're into sneakers. They love the, you know, this is a big deal, certainly in the inner city.
It's this Fox News, of course.
So when you have Trump roll out his sneaker line, they're like, wait a minute, this is cool. He's reaching them on a level that defies and is above politics. The culture always trumps politics. And Trump understands culture like no politician I've ever seen.
He understands it so well. This is what he said at his most recent win.
These lights are so bright in my eyes that I can't see too many people out there. But I can only see the black ones. I can't see any white ones. You see, that's how far I've come.
What?
That's how far I've come. That's a long way, isn't it? We've come a long way together.
Who else can say that?
Well, this was, of course, in front of the black.
Yes, of course it was.
Conservative Federation or whatever it's called.
Yes.
And he put it, but that's, you know, the funny thing is I don't have the whole thing, but one of the shows on Fox, because it was a counter to the guys like Capehart over on
CBS, of course,
who
of
saw
course.
That. This is the most racist thing. I can't imagine anyone saying this is a racist.
Yeah,
and they went on. So they played different clips from parts. I've got to get the whole thing. Because what happened with this speech is that his prompter went out right away.
Oh, excellent. Sabotage.
So he was sabotaged right at the beginning, and he still did a 45-minute set.
Oh,
that killed every segment I've seen of it so far.
It killed so much.
Was just hilarious.
His set killed so much, Richard Lewis died. That's how good it was. It just killed.
He's doing bits like he's doing the one bit I remember about he's doing. First, he does this Joe Biden staggering around bit, which is new. And he doesn't do it that often, but when he does it, it's funny. So he's staggering around doing Joe Biden. He says, hey, and Joe was asked a question, is what's your favorite color and what's your favorite ice cream flavor? And he says, of course, he said, my favorite color is black. And my favorite ice cream is vanilla. Just, and he's getting huge roarous laughter for these gags.
Yeah.
And he's ad-libbing the whole 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's impressive.
He's impressive in so far as his humor is concerned. He's not impressive to me by the fact that he didn't pardon Julian Assange, but we'll leave that for another day.
I mean, and his pushing of the vax is not very impressive either, and not saying
so
it
he's
wasn't
got
such
flaws,
a good idea.
But he's definitely funny.
So everyone is so unhinged that Reverend Al is doing supercuts again.
Pushing proven conspiracy theories that they were not factual conspiracy theories. Jen Psaki. Yesterday, President Biden, pardoned, quote, bifurcate laws that criminalize consensual gay sex
in California.
What are your thoughts? How do we? I mean, some say he's Jim Jones, Jim Jordan, with a jacket on. He co-authored the bill on aid to Israel and Ukraine.
Recrane. Al is back. Al's back.
Well, that's about time. What happened? He must have lost an editor or something.
He's befuddled. I love
or
it.
A producer.
He's befuddled. It's great. It's great. Oh, my goodness. It's so funny. And let me see. What did I have? Well, there is some serious news, of course.
Well, you're still on COVID. I do have one COVID clip.
Oh, I've gone way past COVID. I'm on Trump and Biden. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm backing it up.
Okay. All right.
Because I want to at least get this out of the way. There's a woman in Australia. This is a version of who's that that gal in Ireland that we like to play her clips on?
Claire Daly.
Claire Daly. This is a a Claire Daly of Australia reading the Riot Act to the Australian Parliament. She's in Parliament. And she's in some obscure party like One Australia or some very, you know, minor party. But I thought that this rant is worth getting on our show because we love these rants anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Pauline Hanson.
Well, today has seen an important victory in the fight for freedom and human rights in Australia. The Queensland Supreme Court today determined that COVID-19 vaccine mandates imposed on police and health workers were unlawful. The Queensland Police Service and Queensland Health were wrong to force mandates on their organisations. I said from the start, these mandates were wrong. I said from the start, they contravene Section 51, Part 23A of the Constitution, which prohibits civil conscription through the provision of medical services. One Nation was the only party saying it. I said from the start, the mandate should be unlawful. I introduced legislation in this parliament that would have made certain they were unlawful. With a couple of notable exceptions, the government, opposition, Greens, Jackie Lambie, and other independents refused to support my bill. You all got it wrong. I feel vindicated once again that I have got things right and I'm in tune with the Australian people. You didn't care that people were being coerced into vaccination at risk of their jobs. You didn't care the individual freedoms and rights you were supposed to defend and protect were under attack. You relished the power state governments were taking from their citizens. You cheered them on. You were wrong. One Nation was right because we were standing up for the individual freedoms and constitutional authority that underpin Australian democracy. You didn't, and you attacked us for it. You were wrong. This decision by the Queensland Supreme Court makes it paramount. We have a Royal Commission into the COVID-19 pandemic. The Prime Minister's toothless inquiry must be abandoned. Only a Royal Commission can compel the secret advice that led to these unlawful vaccine mandates in Queensland. And I feel for the firefighters that have gone through it as well in New South Wales and Victoria.
John, you have the call.
Well, that's a bummer clip. Oh, well, but since you're doing that, yes, the season of reveal is upon us. And this clip is from Bloomberg. Bloomberg, who does serious business news. And the Bloomberg host is talking to a medical doctor who was a reporter for Bloomberg, and talking about how COVID caused all these other illnesses. And then he slips in a vax question, her answer. Surprising, to say the least.
Was it just heart disease rates that were worsened by COVID, or were there other ailments that were pressured by this pandemic and this disease?
You know, COVID was terrible for every part of your body. We saw increases in diabetes. We saw increases in stroke. We saw increases in atrial fibrillation and even things you wouldn't normally tie to something like an infectious disease. We were seeing more Alzheimer's disease, for example, and even cancer. So absolutely, COVID was bad all around every part of our bodies.
Why is that? And what does it mean?
What an outstanding question. So why is that all of this this happened because of COVID, and he slips it in.
And if you were inoculated, if you had the vaccine, were you better protected from some of those factors? What was behind the reason for the uptick in all of those different ailments?
Right, such a great question, and that's exactly what scientists are trying to get to the bottom of now.
It's such a great question. Scientists are trying to get to the bottom of it now.
Right, because of course it wasn't just that people were getting infected and that infection was killing them. That infection was also doing other things to our healthcare system, for example. So people weren't doing things like going to the doctor. They were not getting the cancer screening that they normally would have. And in some cases, healthcare systems were overwhelmed. So they stopped doing things like...
Now, she could just leave it at this, but she just goes on and she... reveals all.
Like just any kind of preventative elective surgeries and other types of, you know, emergency rooms were closed. Everything was overwhelmed. So there was definitely some fallout from that. But also your other question is also a very hot topic, and that we saw a lot of questions today on RT Live. People want to know how bad were the vaccines? To what extent was that contributing? And the research is really unequivocal on this. There's no doubt that vaccines did cause some harm, but it was far outweighed by the numbers of lives that were saved from the vaccinations. That's the takeaway message, of course, that doctors, scientists, researchers want everyone to know. Of course, it is troubling if you're the one on the other end had some kind of a bad side effect from a COVID vaccine. Just like with any vaccine, sometimes that does happen. But again, those benefits, including saving lives, really did offset the risks.
So we saved or created more lives than we killed. And that's what doctors want you to know. It's safe and effective. it's just coming out now. Now they just had, the reporters are doing it. Not, of course, on Good Morning America, America's favorite doctor, Dr. Jen. No, we have new information has come out. New stuff has come to light that explains all of these heart attacks.
Now to a GMA health alert for the over 48.
It's a, by the way, it's a health alert, people. Alert, alert.
Now to a GMA health alert for the over 48 million Americans who report using marijuana. A new study finds those who use it daily may be increasing the risk of having a heart attack or stroke. Our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Jennifer Ashton, is here with more. Doc, tell us about this study.
Good morning, my friend. So two very common things, cannabis use, heart disease. This study done by the CDC was really looking to answer the question, is there an association? And after controlling for key factors like age, diabetes, tobacco use, what they found seemed to suggest that there was.
Seemed to suggest.
This study found a 25%.
Seemed to suggest the CDC, the same people who told you it's safe and effective.
That there was. This study found a 25% increased odds of having a heart attack with daily marijuana users, 42% higher odds of having a stroke, again, with daily use.
Wow, that's big,
wow.
A big yeah. thing.
Wow,
there.
That's big. Wow.
Does it matter how you consume it, if you smoke it or if it's edibles?
Well, you sound like you're the researcher there. They mentioned this as the limitation, of which there are many in the way they did this study. They didn't show an answer between smoking or vaping or edible use. They need to do that research.
Oh, so an edible will give you a stroke. Oh, let's talk to Ann Thompson over at NBC.
This new study makes it clear smoking cannabis is like smoking tobacco, dangerous to your heart.
Beep, cannabis beep, is not an innocent beep. Bystander when it comes to cardiovascular disease.
The research published in today's Journal of the American Heart Association found people who use cannabis every day, primarily through smoking, had a 25% increased risk of heart attack.
Interesting that Dr. Jen didn't have that study, and this lady appears to have that in the study. I'm confused.
42% increased risk of stroke compared to non-users. This is one of the largest studies to look at cannabis and cardiovascular events, reviewing data from nearly 435,000 Americans.
Do you remember I may be wrong here, but when the talk of legalization was really heating up, and I'm talking 8-9 years ago, do you remember there were no studies on marijuana? They just wouldn't do them. Do you remember that? Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah, well, there was actually, even years before that, there was a 60-minute show, when it was still a good show, where they had to go to get any marijuana studies. They had to go to Israel, where they had this one scientist who was kicking ass over there. And there was none of this sort of thing. No,
this is a cover-up
for the vaccine, it seems to me. This is the CDC looking for, hey, what's happened in society that we can blame? They said, well, they legalized marijuana a few years ago. That gives me an idea.
Hey, let's have a meeting. I know. Call Dr. Jen, America's favorite doctor.
Yeah, she'll buy into anything.
And meanwhile, controlled...
this is a good find.
Yeah, well, there's... Hey, good find by them. Controlled opportunist Dr. Phil is out promoting his book and his forthcoming television network, which I think launched... Did we just launch? I'm not sure. Should be launching it any day now.
Who would know? We'll never see it.
And he's...
Remember O?
Wow. Yeah, I got to tell you about Oprah. She's leaving the Weight Watchers board and is giving away all of her stock.
Yeah. Well, the stock is collapsing because of Ozempic.
Exactly.
They lost something like $80 million last quarter or something. Yeah. Some huge amount of money.
But I think she also wants to distance herself from it. But I think she knows something. She's like, I want nothing to do with it. I used it and I'm ashamed of it. And I got to get over the shame. And I'm distancing myself from all of that.
Yeah, something's up.
I think she knows that. Now, anyway, so Dr. Phil goes on The View.
And this is good.
And schools the ladies.
In like 08, 09, smartphones came on. And kids stopped living their lives and started watching people live their lives. Mm. And so we saw the biggest spike and the highest levels of depression, anxiety, loneliness, and suicidality since records have ever been kept. And it's just continued on and on and on. And then COVID hits 10 years later, and the same agencies that knew that are the agencies that shut down the schools for 2 years. Who does that? Who takes away the support system for these children? Who takes them away and shuts it down? And by the way, when they shut it down, they stopped the mandated reporters from being able to see children that were being abused and sexually molested, and in fact sent them home and abandoned them to their abusers with no way to watch, and referrals dropped 50 to 60%. So
it was also a pandemic going on, and they were trying to save kids' lives.
Remember, we know a lot of folks who died
during
this. So it was, people weren't laying around eating children. But well, you know what? We're lucky. Maybe we're lucky they didn't, because we kept them out of the places that they could be sick, because no one wanted to believe we had an issue.
Are you saying no school children died of COVID?
I'm saying it was the safest group. They were the less vulnerable group, and they suffered and will suffer more from the mismanagement of COVID than they will from the exposure to COVID. And that's not an opinion, that's a fact.
Well, Phil, we don't even have time to talk it out now, man.
I'm sorry, man. We're out of time, man. Got no time to talk it out, man. Who's the man? Suicidality. Is that an actual word?
That's a new word.
Well, there is suicidality.
A new study details a troubling increase in the number of teenagers on antidepressants. Prescriptions have risen by 65% since the pandemic. Girls make up the majority of the increase. A study notes that antidepressants can be used for many conditions other than depression and anxiety.
Like what? What? What are you using it for? Stop.
Yeah, to get yourself jacked up so you can go do a school shooting.
You know,
useful for that.
I got a note, boots on the ground. My wife is a PhD candidate in psychology. She and other psychologists have told me a possible mechanism as to why SSRIs could cause violence like school shootings. Before taking medication, they have very little energy. The medication gives them energy to get through the day. However, they say if you combine depression with a new increased energy level, this can lead to suicide for some and even violence towards others.
Okay.
It's also sick. Yeah, you know, I went looking for that Law and Order clip. I wish someone could find it.
It's too old. It's from the spin.
We're looking for a fictional account of the elites having vax parties. And here's the underlying part for me. I know a very wealthy guy in the Netherlands who's older. At the time of COVID, I think he was 70, 71. And the way the Netherlands, the way their vax system was set up, of course, it's socialized healthcare. So, you have to go sit in the same room with everybody else and wait your turn to see the doctor. But he, through money, acquired not one, not two, not three, but four shots. He said, I want it as much as possible. I was rereading one of Naomi Wolf's accounts of going back to New York to the Upper East Side, and she talks about the same ladies who were mostly dressed in post-Marxist the Upper East Side ladies who lunched, who had been the cynosure of urbane fashion, who would until recently dress for every outing to outdo one another and to champion their favorite designers, were dressed now not even in fashion. Indeed, fashion seemed no longer to exist. Before 2020, these ladies would have been in chic black cocktail dresses, red frocks with low backs, or eggshell white dresses. Now the same ladies were mostly dressed in a post-Marxist meets suburban shopper uniform. They were wearing, and they had been wearing in the several similar events which I attended recently, white sneakers after Labor Day. Clutch my pearls. They wore comfy black slacks, sweaters, and boxy shapes. Ladies who have been blonded every month at the most selective salons with famous signature rich Upper East Side lady blonding that New York Magazine often discussed, would now appear to have thrown in the towel, were sedately fully gray. And all of these people were talking about their ailments.
Yeah, a bunch of old men.
Their ailments. Like, oh, I have this, and I've got shingles, and I've got all these different things, and I have to have an operation. And you've just, and so there was a clip. What would you have titled that clip if you could remember?
I didn't get that clip. If I did, this comes from a spinoff Law and Order that had, the guy with the big butt, whatever his name is on the...
I don't watch it, so I have no idea.
You know about this guy's butt.
I don't know about any guy's butt. I'm not a guy's butt.
I can't remember his name offhand, but somebody in the chat room will know who he is. He's the main character in the Law & Order, current Law & Order series, not Criminal Intent, but that other one.
Chicago Fire.
No, it's Law & Order.
Okay. All right, long.
And it was called Underworld, Underground, or something. It went for about a year or two, and it was a spinoff Law and Order. That was Law and Order. It was about criminals, about gangs. It was about the mob. And he went underground in this situation. And the main antagonist in the series for the first year, who later became a member of the FBI. FBI Most Wanted cast. He was the criminal, and he was the one throwing these parties. And this was a guy to be about during the year that the vax was rolled out. So it's not a new clip, and it's not going to be easy to find.
That's too bad. I wish we knew.
Well, the thing to do is get a hold of the writer or one of the producers and ask him where this idea came from, because it had to be happening in New York would be the place where something like this would be.
I totally believe it.
Yeah, this guy was a crook, stole a truckload of vaxes, which refrigerated truck, and he had a big party with all his buddies, and they were all getting vaxed.
Yeah. All right, so back to Trump for a minute. Because the controlled opportunists are all dragging everybody to the wrong battlefield, which is the Fani Willis saga, which, although funny, I mean, Megyn Kelly, she was just jitty about the latest.
I have here in front of me the texts. I've got 31 pages of the text messages between Ashley Merchant and Terrence Bradley.
We got them.
We've got them right here. We're going to go through them together. Just got them. Obtained by our guest, Phil Holloway.
Whoa, Phil.
I told you he was breaking big news in this case,
big news.
Here he breaks
breaking
it again
news.
Right here
breaking
on the Megyn Kelly Show. You heard a couple of them earlier discussed in this show, but we are going to go over them all in order as they happened. Not every single one, because there's 31 pages. We'll be here all day, but the relevant one. Again, these are some of the texts that Terrence Bradley is now claiming he was merely speculating about. You decide. We'll walk you through them.
Oh, please.
We'll let you decide. My team's been going crazy on this this morning in the past few minutes trying to get something in order here.
Hours and hours of text messages. It's salacious. Oh, man. Everyone's, oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And her phone Bluetooth was Gorilla Grip Pussy. Oh, wow. News, breaking news. It's crazy.
You know, the funny thing, the thing, and I think I'm going to start referring to Fannie Willis as Phony Willis. Because I was watching, you know, there's a show, I don't have a clip from it, but the show, Dersh Show, have you watched this?
Dersh, what's your show?
Yeah, it's called Dersh Show.
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's a podcast that his kid produces.
No.
And Dersh just comes on, and it's like the old school, where just one guy staring... One guy staring into a camera and just pontificating about everything he can think of, you know, old style, that we used to see on YouTube more than we do now. And Dersh goes on, and he keeps saying Phony Willis, Phony Willis. And then he catches himself and he changes it to Stefani.
Oh, really?
And I just thought it was so funny because I think Phony Willis is a good phrase.
Well, I guess the whole point is that she perjured herself. So she'll whatever.
Well, they could. Yeah. Well, means- my favorite was they asked that guy as her boyfriend. He's some direct questions. So we have the phone cell data showing that you were at her house.
Yeah.
And you were overnight and he was on and on and on. And you're telling us that the phone cell data is not correct.
OK.
And the guy with a straight face says, yeah, it's wrong.
OK. All right, so I'm not going to go down that road because there are actual things that matter, such as the SCOTUS opinions.
The U.S. Supreme Court's decision to decide whether Donald Trump is immune from criminal prosecution in his election subversion case won't just set a huge historical precedent. It is hugely crucial because of its timing.
Usually.
A lower court already ruled unanimously that Trump is not immune from prosecution for allegedly trying to overturn the 2020 election, which culminated in the January 6th Capitol attack and outlined by the special prosecutor last year.
It was fueled by lies.
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 Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government.
Trump argued that being president at the time granted him immunity, but the lower court disagreed. The Supreme Court could have chosen not to take this case and let that lower court ruling stand, but instead it wants to have the final say. The Supreme Court will start hearing this case in late April, and most court watchers think Trump will lose the case, that the court will agree with the lower court that Trump is not immune from prosecution. But with the final decision not expected until June, that means the possible trial for Trump might not finish, much less even start, until after the November election.
Well, we have an opinion from our constitutional lawyer, Rob, which differs a little bit. And by the way, Rob is also a ham radio operator, so he's very trustworthy. We can trust him. He says,
yes, that's exactly correct.
It's like Eagle Scouts, ham radio guys, trustworthy, trustworthy.
Yep. Eagle Scouts, ham radio guys, same thing.
SCOTUS also entered an accelerated briefing and oral argument schedule. Trump's opening brief is due in 3 weeks. That's March 19th. Jack Smith's answering brief is due on April 8th. And Trump's reply brief is due April 15th. Oral arguments will happen the week of April 22nd. So here's his comment. One might be tempted to say this is good for Trump since he gets a shortcut to SCOTUS on a major issue. Plus, when SCOTUS grants cert, it's typically because it's contemplating reversing the judgment of the lower court. But Rob says he's not so sure this is the case here. As a criminal defendant, Trump probably wants to slow roll things, of course, until the election's over. This is probably why he exercised the option of seeking en banc review at the D.C. Circuit before petitioning SCOTUS. Today's development skips that step and moves things along much faster, probably not what Trump wants. Add to this the accelerated case schedule. Not only does this move things along faster still, but it may also signal that SCOTUS wants to nip the issue in the bud. That prospect should trouble Trump's team. So, of course, he says it's all tea leaf reading on his part, but this is, I think a good analysis from our ham radio broadcasting constitutional Eagle Scout lawyer.
Well, a couple of things that have to be noted. If this goes through that the president has no immunity whatsoever and everything, he's responsible for everything he does, this goes right back to the war crimes of Bush.
Yep.
And the war crimes of Obama, specifically the killing of two American citizens by fiat when Obama had that Muslim extremist who's an American and his son who was sitting in a cafe killed by drone strikes.
Yes. Lock them all up.
That was this out and out murder.
Yeah, lock them all up.
But, you know, if you start doing that, then we're going to get in the situation like every other country in South America, where as soon as the guy gets out of office, he gets locked up.
It would make for a great...
this is not going to be a good thing.
It would help the podcast. It would make the podcast very interesting.
It would help the podcast. I got two Trump clips.
By the way, I hope they are protecting our Supreme Court justices, all of them. I'm a little worried about some of them. You know, they hate Clarence Thomas so much. You know, remember when they were camping outside of justices' houses and they wouldn't.
Yeah, and they weren't doing anything protection. About it. And then Nancy Pelosi was encouraging it.
Yeah. So I'm just
here's an NTD clip on Trump immunity.
Okay, hold on a second. Where are you, Trump immunity? Yes. Okay.
This is NTD.
The Supreme Court has agreed to take up former President Trump's immunity claim. The justices will decide whether Trump is shielded from prosecution in Special Counsel Jack Smith's federal election case. The case is currently on pause as Trump pursues his appeal. The former president argues that he's entitled to presidential immunity for official acts that occurred while he was in office. A federal appeals court previously ruled that Trump does not enjoy immunity. The high court will hear oral arguments in late April. This will likely further delay the trial for the federal election case.
Yeah, this contradicts what our lawyer here says. Then,
yeah, everybody thinks it's going to delay things. Now, the other clip I have is about Trump and getting money.
Yes, we also have an opinion on this from our lawyer.
And your appellate judge today rejecting former President Trump's request to pause the $454 million civil fraud penalty. But Associate Justice Anil Singh did grant Trump's request to stay other portions of the judgment. Singh stayed the portion of the decision barring Trump from running any New York corporation or applying for loans from the state's banks for 3 years. His decision must still be affirmed by a full panel of the mid-level state appeals court. Trump's attorneys had offered to post a $100 million bond. Attorney General Letitia James, who brought the fraud case, said in a response that Trump's request shows he has insufficient liquid assets to satisfy the judgment. But Trump may find the funds elsewhere. A potential merger involving Truth Social could give him access to billions of dollars.
So here's, indeed, the appellate judge did overturn two important parts of the points of the three main points. One, the original judgment barred his sons and others from running the business, and the lawyer said, hey, you can't just pull established management out of a large global operation, have strangers run it, that would be disastrous. And the appellate judge, Singh, agreed. The original judgment barred Trump's businesses from getting loans in New York. Trump's lawyers pointed out this would prevent Trump from ever obtaining the funds needed for an appeal bond, and the appellate judge also agreed to this. However, the judgment that forced Trump to post an appeal bond of nearly $500 million, the 460, give or take, and his lawyers offered to put up $100 million, and the appellate judge said no. So Trump needs to come up with the entire bond amount by, there's a date here, which no one ever mentions. I really appreciate what our lawyer does here. by March 24th. He needs to post a bond on or before that date. And well, we were talking about the 10%. You know, yes, he might be able to find a bail bondsman that will spot him for, you know, for $400 million and let him put up 40. Doubtful, though. So he's going to have to figure that out somewhere. It's a lot of cash. And otherwise, yeah, I think they'll go after his buildings and really try to destroy him.
That's the idea. So one way, I mean, Biden, if you remember about a year ago or 2 years ago, he said that that's what they're going to do to keep Trump. When he was asked, he says, no, Trump's not going to get on the ballot. We're not going to let him.
Yeah. So they're really trying. Yeah. Meanwhile, the meme continues that Trump has been captured by the Christian nationalists.
It's, whoever they are.
The professor at American University in Paris appeared on France 24 and explained exactly who they are.
Despite the litany of criminal charges he's facing, he's still very appealing to Republican voters. How do you explain that?
Well, there are two reasons. One is ideological, that has to do with a certain kind of charisma that he has. But the other is, in essence, Donald Trump has been captured by a social movement with an ideology, a zealous social movement, which is called now Christian nationalism. But Christian nationalism is more than a zealous universe of closed truths. It is also an organization. It's a structured organization.
Oh, here we go.
It has its policy organizations like the Heritage Foundation. It has its legal foundation like the Federalist Society. It has its databases. It has a whole network of evangelical churches all across the United States with thousands of pastors who can give the propaganda of Donald Trump and who can mobilize the votes and get them out to vote.
Unlike the Democrats using black pastors and reverends to do their bidding, but okay.
They tried to do fundraising. Donald Trump is having problems here with fundraising. Nevertheless, they have an important fundraising machine.
Yes.
They can mobilize voters. They can bring them to the polls.
Well, you know, the problem here, this professor, he has never heard of the Johnson Amendment, which is in the IRS tax code. I'm very surprised this professor doesn't realize President Johnson.
Well, one of the reporters should have called him out on that. What kind of reporters do we have here? We all know about this.
I don't think many people know about the Johnson
from
Amendment.
From the pulpit, you cannot advise people how to vote.
No.
Period.
No, then you lose your tax exempt status.
Exactly.
That's right.
And every reporter in the world should know this, and they would ask, and they would point this out.
And every pastor and every church leader knows this. Of course.
Yeah. They would get their IRS tax-free status, which is a major benefit to a church. It would have them pull right out from under them instantly.
Mm-hmm. So
this is bull crap.
Yeah. Well, there was a little.
And by the way, the Heritage Foundation has got nothing to do, which I think was. It's got nothing to do with Christian anything.
No,
I mean there are probably a lot of Christians. They're sure, but they're not a Christian nationalist front.
And NPR, they just can't give up. They just can't give up on the IVF. They're really, really pushing the Roe v.
By the way,
Wade.
You know when this technology first appeared.
IVF technology?
IVF is tested. That refers to, and they won't say it. No one has said it in any of the reporting.
In vitro fertilization.
No, they say that, but they never said this is test tube babies.
Oh, which is a great. Oh, how can we should bring that back?
Test tube babies, and the test tube babies. This technology to make test tube babies. 1959. This is nothing new. They make it sound like some new technology that the right wing's trying to quash.
Well, here's the NPR just going Google Gaga over Justice Parker.
The Chief Justice in Alabama, his name's Tom Parker. I mean, he's been pretty open about how his interpretation of Christianity is important to his job as a judge, right? But
right?
I know that in your reporting, you have found that it goes way beyond that. Can you tell us how?
Oh, well, yes, I can't wait.
Sure, yeah. You know, Christian theology is very evident in Justice Parker's work. You know, if you read, for example, the concurring opinion on the IVF ruling, it's notable to see that he quotes extensively from sources like the Book of Genesis, from the Ten Commandments, and from Western Christian thinkers of centuries ago, like Thomas Aquinas.
Thomas Aquinas?
Oh, no.
Thomas Aquinas?
You know, and that's a contrast to, for example, citations from case studies or legal precedent that, you know, one might expect when looking at the legal reasoning of a top judicial officer of a state.
But that's not really what the problem is it?
Right.
But, you know, actually,
Wow, she did a good right there. I love that. Right.
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 When looking at the legal reasoning of a top judicial officer of a state.
Right.
But, you know, actually, this alone isn't what is drawing attention.
Ah, are you ready? Are you ready? How could this judge have screwed it up? What possible media faux pas could he have made that puts him so in the spotlight of NPR? Do you have any idea?
Use the N-word.
On the very same day that the ruling came out, Parker was a guest on a podcast.
Oh, no! He was on a podcast! Oh, boy!
And his remarks there suggest that his theology veers into what some experts consider Christian extremism.
Whoa!
Wait, what do you mean by Christian extremism?
Well, here's a clip. She asked this question with so much unctuousness. Wait, what do you mean by Christian extremism?
Hold on a second. This is very interesting what you're saying.
He veers into what some experts consider Christian extremism.
Wait, what do you mean by Christian extremism?
Wait.
Well, here's a clip of Parker from that program.
Get ready for some extremism.
God created government. And the fact that we have let it go into the possession of others is heartbreaking for those of us who understand, and we know it is for him. And that's why he is calling and equipping people to step back into these mountains right now.
Oh, no. This guy's an extremist.
That goes against Catholic teachings that Satan created governments, but that's...
Is that true?
That's debatable.
Is that Catholic doctrine?
I just made it up. It makes sense to me.
Well, I thought that our Declaration of Independence says these are your inalienable rights given to us by God.
Rights are, but the government wasn't. That's why they had to write all these rights that had to be written out, because the government's bad.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. I love NPR. Send your money. Get a tote bag, everybody. That's what you should be doing. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. These people are just crazy. Let's see.
You just want to change gears real quick and just talk for just a short second about the Texas fire?
Yeah, definitely.
The raging wildfire is rampaging across the Texas panhandle, threatening homes, farms, and businesses, and forcing residents to evacuate. The fire has also prompted the closure of a plant that dismantles nuclear weapons. NTD's Christina Corona gives us an update on the blaze.
The wildfires began at approximately 2:20 p.m. Monday throughout northern Texas and scorched through 250,000 acres in just 28 hours. It's becoming the second largest in the state's history.
At this time, we have fire crews from all over the state mobilizing to perform suppression and search and recovery efforts. The process will likely take several days to complete.
Stroke said the information is limited due to some areas still being affected by fire, and some are not able to be accessed safely.
We have had fire crews out for the last 48 hours plus, I believe, so many of them without sleep. They're doing everything they can.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott declared a state of disaster for 60 counties, mobilizing state resources to support local firefighters. The largest current blaze is the Smokehouse Creek Fire that has scorched more than 500,000 acres of land. The blaze spread from Texas into neighboring Roger Mills County in western Oklahoma, where officials encouraged people in the area to flee. One Texas resident who had to evacuate from one town to another multiple times said,
it went from smoke billowing in that was white to then sunshine coming through that looked like we were engulfed in flames all around. It looked like our town was just being engulfed.
Had a little drop out there. You're back, right?
Yeah.
Let me talk about this.
Well, before you do, I do want to play the second half, which is the part about the A-bombs, because this was unknown to me that up there in Texas in the panhandle is where all the A-bombs are made. Did you know this?
Yes, I did know.
You did?
I did. Well, I don't know about A-bombs. you make it sound very Oppenheimer-ish. But yes.
Yeah, well, Oppenheimer's a popular movie.
Nuclear facility, yes.
The Pantex plant.
Can we play this in the name?
Yeah, here it is.
The Pantex plant near Amarillo evacuated non-essential staff Tuesday night. The plant is the main U.S. site for atomic bomb assembly and disassembly, which completed its last new bomb in 1991 and has dismantled thousands since. Authorities have not said what ignited the fires or how many homes have been destroyed, but strong winds, dry grass, and unseasonably warm temperatures fed the blazes.
Okay, so first of all, I know a lot about this. Texas Slim is from there. He's up there now. He almost had to evacuate his mom. It's not the worst fire they've ever had. It's one of the worst for sure. There's a lot of cattle up there. So the really tough part is people were able to, save a lot of cattle, but you got 600 cows and no grass for them to eat. So people are desperately trying to find places anywhere further south where they can let their cows eat. So that's a real problem. Now immediately, this is always interesting. Two narratives pop up. One is HAARP, of course, the government. Yep, they're burning it down. You know, Abbott's doing this about the border. Blah, 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 HAARP.
Nowhere near the border.
No, I know, but it's to distract from the border or whatever. The second one is climate change. Of course, it's climate change. It's what happens with climate change. And I do have a clip here of a typical panhandle Texan. I tried to filter it a little bit so you can hear what he says. If not, I will reiterate it in this report. Listen to this.
Heading into the infernos. This was the scene that greeted firefighters in Greenville as they responded to the second biggest wildfire in Texas's history. An emergency has been declared in 60 counties across the most northern part of the state. Towns have been evacuated and many homes and businesses destroyed. Texas has seen record high temperatures in the past few days, and parts of the panhandle are described as abnormally dry. That, combined with strong winds, have resulted in the ferocity of the blazes. The fires have spread across the Texas border into the neighboring state of Oklahoma, where there have also been evacuations.
We're in the tornado zone and far zone here the last few years. And I'd call it climate change and global warming, but I'm not woke.
So I know it's hard to hear, but this is a Texan. He says, they're saying it's climate change, but I won't because I'm not woke. It happens every year.
Happens every year.
The biggest concern has been for the Pantex plant, a nuclear weapons facility, which had to close temporarily. However, it has now reopened for normal operations. And respite for all affected areas is on the way. Thursday's forecast is for rain and even snow.
snow.
Yeah, it went from, we had 80, almost 90 degrees here 2 days ago, and this morning it was 36.
You had to, but before you had that hot weather, it was 29.
I know. It was that HAARP. It's HAARP or climate change or something. It happens. This happens ever since I've been in Texas, in Austin. And we get bad fires when it's dry. And then all of a sudden you get a little bit of hot weather. You just need one, and you have winds. The winds are really, and you that's have, the problem. And
let's, nobody wants to talk about this. You have people setting these fires.
For sure.
You have fire bugs out there, and you also have nut creeps jobs. And terrorists. Yes.
Nut jobs.
And
nut
disgruntled jobs. People on SSRIs and who knows what else.
Yes. All right, I want to talk about the border a little bit. Well, first, let's talk about the reason for the border.
The reason for the border is to keep the country separate. one country's on one side of the border and one's on the other. That's the reason. Yes.
And the reason that we have people coming through the border, just stepping over the line and popping in, is because the financial elites in the United States know that we need to grow in population. This is not the trend globally. The trend is not growth. China is not growing. The EU is not growing. The bankers have said to me verbatim, we win as long as we keep adding to our population. So keep the borders wide open. That is the sole reason in my mind that these things are open. And if you listen to what's happening in New York, what?
I was just going to say, since you brought the bankers in, and by the way, we should note that the Democrat Party has become a banker's party.
Oh, yeah.
Since Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
And so they do the bidding of the bankers.
Of the bankers. And this is
the Democrat Party doing it, and they're the ones responsible for this current overflow.
The former New York banker, who was a Democrat, told me in no uncertain terms multiple times, we win because our population grows. How does it grow? Well, not through our children, because we're putting them on hormone blockers, or, you know, we're scaring them with climate change. No, it's growing because we're letting good people across the border. And when New York gets full, we just give them jobs.
Sandra, again, Mayor Adams is taking a look at the city's sanctuary laws to address the migrant crisis. This time, he's focused on crime and public safety and the city's ability to collaborate with ICE to address those issues. But speaking with the city council speaker earlier today, she says it's a non-starter that jobs is the answer, not jail.
We are not considering laws, changes to laws. These laws have been in effect for decades.
New York City Council Speaker Adrian Adams Wednesday standing behind the city's sanctuary laws, saying they were enacted for a reason, to protect innocent immigrants who historically have felt threatened because of their status.
Okay, so jobs. She says jobs. Hochul says jobs. We're going to get them jobs. We're going to get them jobs. They need jobs. They're here. We're sanctuary city. We'll get them jobs. That's all. We're just going to get them jobs. Europe has the same issue. The European Union is in decline. The people are getting older. There's no one to take care of the, you know, there's no younger generation coming up. And by the way, they're all jitty about abortion over there. The French just enshrined in their constitution the right to abortion. Here's the International Planned Parenthood Foundation lady on France 24.
Yeah, so the International Planned Parenthood is a global service provider and an advocate for sexual rights.
Services provider.
Worldwide.
I like it.
I provide a service, software as a service.
And we work in more than 145 countries. And here in France, we have a member association that is called Le Planning Familial.
Now, your reaction to that vote at the Senate. I mean, there were people who thought perhaps the bill might get blocked by the Senate, but not a bit of it. It went through by an overwhelming majority. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, to be honest, at the beginning, we were scared because there were a lot of pushback. But as you can see by my smile, we all...
No, listen to what she said. You're stepping on it.
Onto that.
Yeah, to be honest, at the beginning, we were scared because there were a lot of pushback. But as you can see by my smile, we all delighted. And what happened tonight is history being made. And
we love it. We love it. Abortion is great. We're happy. So their population is going down. Now let's look at some other countries. Japan.
There are not enough babies being born in Japan. For the eighth year running, births are at a record low and by the largest margin ever, 2023. So the number of births fall 5.1% to just over 750,000. The number of people tying the knot was also down. Under 490,000 got hitched. That's a drop of 5.9%. This is the first time in 90 years marriages fell below 500,000, and suggests the population may continue to drop as births out of wedlock are rare in Japan. The number of deaths is also contributing to the population crisis. The number last year was a record 1.6 million.
The decline of births is in a state of crisis. The next 6 years up until the 2030s, when the population of the young generation is expected to decline rapidly, is the last chance to see if the declining birth rate trend can be reversed. And I believe we are at a time when we have to take urgent measures.
Those measures include expanding child benefits and child care leave allowances, and to promote wage hikes for younger workers to enable them to get married.
So Japan is on the verge of extinction, and just and they're only now saying, oh, maybe we should do something about it. We should stimulate that. By the way, Japan, completely vaxxed nation, completely masked nation. The elders are very important in the child rearing process. They take care of the children during the day. They live, younger couples live with their parents. The grandparents take care of the kids. They're dying. I have no idea why, but the old people are dying much quicker than they used to. And by the way, those incentives don't always work. Let's check in with South Korea.
It was already the country with the world's lowest birth rate. But South Korea's fertility rate has plunged to a record low, according to the country's official data, further deepening its demographic crisis.
There were 230,000 births in 2023, a decrease of 7.7% from the year before. The total fertility rate recorded during a woman's reproductive life was 0.72, down from 0.78 the previous year.
A fertility rate of 0.72 is far below the 2.1 per woman needed for South Korea to maintain a steady population, with the country's 51 million population size on track to halve by the end of this century, and puts pressure on health services due to an aging population. The new data defies the billions of dollars in government schemes since 2006 to try and reverse the long-time trend and persuade people to have more children. But South Koreans in their 20s and 30s point to soaring property prices, skyrocketing child-rearing costs, and career advancement worries as factors that delay or halt their family planning.
0.7. That country's going out of style. There will be no South Korea. North Korea wins, I guess. So this is the real problem. And we have in the United States, I already talked about the EU. In the United States, we have the exact same problem. Exact. Oh, it's too expensive. Now is not the right time. And fertility rates are down because we're eating soy and plastic and chemicals and anything but
yeah, soy is an estrogen.
Yes.
Analog. A lot of people don't realize.
It turns the frogs gay. It's bad.
Atrazine.
Atrazine. So all of this is bad, bad, bad. So this is why your borders are open. Unless we start humping like bunny rabbits and start making kids, it will not stop because the financial elites of the world command it so. And they own the politicians. So now let's talk about what's coming across the border. The Chinese men of military age, it's going to be an army. They're going to kill us from the inside. It's horrible. They're all spies. No, some may be spies. And the guy who answered these questions was...
By the way, most of the spies are spying on the other
Chinese.
Not us.
Miles Yu was the China advisor to Pompeo when Pompeo was Secretary of State. Remember that? During the Trump administration. So he goes on C-SPAN, and I think he lays it out really well, the main reasons why people from China are coming into the United States.
What's the cause of this huge influx?
Okay, so this is a this is a crisis of the perfect storm. First of all, China's economy is in big trouble. So the youth unemployment is really huge, somewhere around 21% to 45%, some estimate says.
That sounds like your No Agenda show.
So and also in the last 10 years under Xi Jinping's rule, a lot of people will feel very repressed. So the number of people fleeing China has increased dramatically. In 2013, when Xi Jinping first came to power, people from China applying for political asylum in the United States was about 24,000, 25,000. 10 years later, today, that number quadrupled to about 100,000. So there is a push factor inside China. There's also the pull factor. That is, United States is by far the most generous country accepting immigrants. So, of course, there's also opportunity. That is, our border has been porous. Our politicians were basically, in the political paralysis state, didn't know what to do. So that created a lot of opportunities for the Chinese who want to get out of China. And also, don't forget, China is also a communist country. It has a massive security and intelligence apparatus. So this is an opportunity for them to also to exploit this this open border and to get their infiltration into the United States. So it's a really combination of many factors. And also some of the Central American countries, most prominently Ecuador, provide this sort of mechanism by which that Chinese national could hop on the plane and land in Ecuador visa-free. So from there, they make the long journey to the southern border of the United States. That's why there's such a surge in Chinese illegal border crossing.
So before I go to the next clip, two bits of news from IOM.int, the International Office of Migration, run by a former State Department.
Creep.
IOM and UNHCR welcome Ecuador's move to regularize refugees and migrants, strengthening national... What?
I was just going to say, we have to remember that Ecuador has been captured. It was captured some time ago when they booted out the president, duly elected, and pushed in the American sympathetic guy who also kept Assange from ever going to Ecuador where he wanted to escape to.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just basically our puppets. And so whatever they're doing is because of what we told them to do.
And that is the International Office of Migration from the United Nations. They are pushing regularized, because it's not legal or illegal. It's regular. It's regular.
Regular.
So they are promoting this. It is our money, our U.S. money going into that organization to promote this. But let's blame it on TikTok.
My understanding is there's like TikTok videos out there about here's how you get to TikTok. The U.S. Here's where you can cross in. There's a hole in this fence or this barrier, whatever.
So there's a demand. There is obviously a enterprise to explore this kind of a demand. So there is a lot of middlemen that organize such a massive exodus from China. And so the largest Chinatown, for example,
it was hard to hear, but I want to repeat what he says. The largest Chinatown is not New York. Is not San Francisco. No, it's in Ecuador.
A massive exodus from China. And so the largest Chinatown, for example, is not in New York, in London, not in Toronto, is in Quito, Ecuador, where a lot of Chinese nationals land over there visa-free, and you have this well-organized organization, some of the Chinese, a lot of locals, and to provide this kind of facilities and to make the journey, it's a very long journey. You have to land over there and get out of Ecuador and cross countries like Colombia and then Panama and then Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala, and then Mexico. And then go to Arizona, Texas, and California.
And hop on the Uber.
So this is basically a well-organized enterprise. So this is one of the reasons why the scale is massive, and this surge is continuing, so it's very worrisome.
Yeah, what he didn't mention is the lie that, they're going through the Darien Gap, they're trudging through the mud. No! They're hopping flights, it's organized, there's charters, there's families, they got Chinatown, there's organization, it's a pathway, with the final bit being an Uber to the border, right there outside California. Hop in. So the final clip here, he does indeed say,
this is a good catch, by the way.
I was amazed when I saw this guy. Actually, Tolar, I think, found this for me. It's C-SPAN. He's our C-SPAN guy. He's really watching all those call-in shows. And so there is a level of CCP possibility, of course, because, you know, we have CCP operatives just like, there's CIA operatives in Russia and China. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We killed them.
Not China.
China. They got killed in China. But that's how it works. I mean, every country has spies registered, unregistered. It's just a fact of life. The irregular migrants does have a benefit to some CCP activity, of course.
You said that the Chinese government would exploit the situation to infiltrate the United States. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, there's many legal ways. We have a lot of immigration flaws. Some of our immigration policies, particularly passport issuing, is just amazingly mad.
Now listen to this.
So if you're a Chinese national, you're holding the Chinese passport, but you qualify for some to become a citizen of the United States, either through marriage or through your own talent, and you are entitled for a U.S. passport, and the U.S. government would issue a passport without asking whether you still have a Chinese passport or not. So as a result, we have a lot of Chinese nationals who are holding American passport as well as a Chinese passport. So that's basically one of the legal ways they could explore this openness by the Chinese sort of malign factors, intelligence and security apparatus. This one, obviously, is more lucrative for the Chinese, because if you cross border illegally, and the registration, the tracing mechanism of this illegally crossed Chinese nationals will be far less effective. So it's much harder to track them. So that's one reason why this is a very good opportunity for the Chinese state actors to exploit.
Yeah, the last thing they're going to do is try and kill us from the inside with the military-aged men. And the answer to all of this is make babies. Get married, start a family, make babies. That's it. That's it. That's all we need to do. It's the easiest thing in the world. We know how to do it. Everyone knows how to do it.
They've kind of been dissuaded by the educational system of this country, which is socialists who like the whole country to be taken over by socialism.
Maybe Marxism, to be more specific, but yes.
Well, yes. I'm sorry. I shouldn't even use socialism anymore. Yes,
but and we have the Rainbow Guard, who makes sure that everyone's on point. It's our version of Mao's Red Guard. We have the Rainbow Guard here.
Yeah.
Which, as I was thinking about all this woke stuff.
Yeah.
Do you remember? I think that this really ramped up in 2015 with something that we ignored for the longest time, which was Gamergate. I really think that's where this started.
Well, I think it started long before that.
I'll agree. But it really...
I was lectured about politically correct when I was first the editor at InfoWorld in the early 80s, 1981.
This is a good story. Tell this story.
And I was told about the idea. Well, I had been mistakenly used a word in an editorial. I was writing these editorials for the magazine.
Yes. Tell us, what word was it?
The word was deviant.
Deviant. The word is deviant.
The word was deviant, and the word deviant was a trigger word in 1981 It was a trigger word, and it was a slur against gays.
Deviant?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, of all people, who eventually was a writer for 20-plus years, the New York Times, John Markoff, gave me a lecture about politically correct language.
Wow.
And that's what the term was politically correct. And I never heard this before. He says, yeah, he's no big deal. And he goes on and on about it. And... I had made a mistake by using this word. It had nothing to do with sexuality or anything else. I used it in some other context, but the context doesn't matter because you used the word. And so I got, your letters came in. I mean, I got no letters from writing the column for PC Magazine years later. Who's on first? Kind of mocking Chinese names. That, no problem.
Hey, but did the gays lash out at you?
Yeah.
They did?
Yeah, that was my first experience getting lashed out at. Now, if this was done in a modern context, I'd have been marginalized to an extreme. Luckily, I never got any further than the use of that one word one time in 1981 and then learning about political correctness in 1981.
Right.
So this goes back. This has been going on for a long time.
I agree. But now we're talking 9 years ago, Gamergate gamified the whole deplatforming game. I think that's really when all of that started.
That could be.
You know,
I don't have a better example than my obscure one.
Deplatforming is a game. It's like, how far can I push everything until I get canceled or deplatformed or demonetized or whatever?
Yeah, demonetized. It's a game. You get demonetized, then you get reprimanded, then you get deplatformed, then you get kicked off, and then you get one thing after another. Yeah.
According to the Daily Wire, the Los Angeles School District is a pipeline for the trans youth clinic.
The what?
The Los Angeles Unified School District is a pipeline, has a pipeline for to the trans youth clinics. So bypassing the parents for medical intervention, sterilization.
You have to bypass the parents, or you're not going to get anywhere.
Which is where the Rainbow Guard comes in. This is exactly what happened in my lifetime in Maoist China. This is exactly what happened. And all those kids all looked androgynous, and they wound up killing their parents.
Killing
their teachers.
Yeah, they're killing everybody.
Yeah.
It was a moment in time that was quite fascinating.
Unless you were in China.
Unless you were in China.
not all that fast.
So from we're out here looking at it, wow, these guys have gone nuts.
So now we got to go to the AI, which has been severely affected by this. In particular, Gemini, the latest rebrand of Google Barf. And now, of course, we all saw it was pretty funny. Let me play this Matt Taibbi clip, because he has a good testimony about this.
Last week, Google's much ballyhooed new AI tool, Gemini, became a national punchline. Company engineers built an AI that apparently couldn't or wouldn't draw white faces, resulting in images like Pope, Viking, and 1943 German soldier that were reimagined as preposterous DEI-inspired reboots. I asked Gemini about controversies involving various famous politicians. I don't know how to answer that, it kept saying. When I asked the same question about myself, it spat out a long list of episodes about articles with titles like The Great California Water Heist and Glenn Beck's War on Comedy. It described racist remarks I apparently made and accusations of anti-Semitism after I supposedly described Nestle executives as having noses like giant penises. Holy shit, I thought none of this ever happened. I never wrote any of those articles. They don't exist. Google explained, Gemini is a creativity tool and may not always be accurate. You think? Gemini shows the awesome dystopian possibilities of AI. Forget the funny historical errors. It creates instant deep fake compromise about real people like me and probably like you.
So we have boots on the ground inside Google. I verified this source as someone who could actually know and writes very short. Hey, Adam, I work at Google and on Gemini. In case you are wondering how Gemini produces black Revolutionary War generals and other diverse results, it's through a layer that rewrites your query. If you write, quote, show me pictures of Vikings, it will be rewritten as, quote, show me a diverse picture of Vikings, including a black male in a wheelchair. He says, this is an actual example I verified via internal tooling. I believe this is happening a lot at Google. I think rewriting queries happens a lot. And it wouldn't surprise me if this is exactly what went down.
But why?
Woke? Why? Why any of this? Why any of it? Why?
It seems to me that you don't want to do this. It cheapens the results. It ruins the product. It gives you a bad reputation. There's nothing good comes out of it.
No.
Google didn't benefit from this ridiculous nonsense at all. I think they hurt them.
Of course it did. They have no business being in this business. They just
We have to go back to the basics about Google. They're a antisocial and asocial nerd system that people that don't even socialize amongst themselves.
Yes.
And they don't, you know, they couldn't do it with their Facebook clone. They couldn't do it with their Twitter clone. They can't do it. They always make these mistakes of a person who is not a socialized individual. They're not socialized properly. That's just the nature of the beast. And there's no getting around it. And this shows what happens when you give them free rein. They need adult supervision.
Something struck me. There's an entire generation, perhaps we're on our second generation, and they've grown up on one thing, search. And the goal is information. It's not even good information. It's just, that's the goal. Search, get a result. That's the whole generation. Search. Search Yelp. Search Google. Search YouTube. Search. And just give me information. I think this is a problem.
There's no solution to this problem that you created. Are you just... That you identified, let's say.
No, I don't think so. I mean, they're really searching for connection, but they're getting information. And that, you know, that's like that's it. Just search. I'll just search it. It's not good. It's not good.
We do it on the show.
Yeah, but you know, we already made children. We're successful. we've done our business, and let's see how else children are being hurt in America's schools.
It's the latest incident of a new and insidious form of bullying. A group of students at a Beverly Hills middle school creating deep fake pornographic images of their classmates, swapping the faces of their peers onto pictures of nude bodies.
I'm very disappointed.
The school alerting parents after the images were shared among students via text. Beverly Hills police are now assisting in the investigation.
Whoa. This is a new uncharted territory when it comes to information that's being, you know, created and disseminated.
The disturbing incident happening just weeks after fake nude images of Taylor Swift appeared online. District Superintendent Michael Breggy sees a connection.
I do believe that played in our students becoming aware of what's possible with the technology.
This technology is easy to use and so easily accessible. They can get it right on their phones, instantaneously create content, and then send it anywhere.
AI still so new, this all falls into a legal gray area. Experts say it's still unclear if the fake images are even child pornography.
Why are there not more legal protections to prevent this type of incident from happening right now?
This is one of the situations where law is oftentimes chasing after technology.
A federal bill aims to criminalize sharing sexually explicit deepfake photos, but it stalled in Congress.
Yes, of course. It's like this is new. It's like
it's not even close to being new. This was going on once Adobe Photoshop was released in 1987, I might add. These started to happen, and it's been happening ever since.
I thought it was Microsoft Paint. I know I made some great images in Microsoft Paint.
Well, you can do it with any of these things. GIMP, when it came out, you could do it.
The GIMP. Get the GIMP.
So the point is that you could do this, but it was hard. Now you could just do it with a prompt. I mean, this is like, now it's lazy man's version. Make so-and-so, you know. And by beautiful. The way, the Taylor Swift stuff, some of the stuff, the Taylor Swift stuff is hilarious.
A lot of it's hilarious.
It's worth looking into.
Mark Pugner says it's hilarious.
It is.
I think there's another AI fake clip here from Good Morning America.
My name is Caroline Mullett, and I'm a ninth grader at Issaquah High School.
Despite being the daughter of Washington State Senator Mark Mullett, this was Caroline's first time in front of her state legislature.
Yeah, this is like babies getting thrown out of incubators, U.S. style. Like, bring your kid in. Make your kid testify about this so we can pass a law.
At our homecoming dance last year, a member of our class took pictures of my female friends and then posted them online using AI. He used AI to show my friends' faces, but then filtered their bodies to make them appear nude.
Caroline's friends had become victims of deepfakes, manipulated photos, videos, or audio created using artificial intelligence that appear real. Over the last year, as AI has become more accessible, deepfakes have become more prevalent, with targets ranging from political figures to celebrities like Taylor Swift to high schoolers. This week, reports of students creating and sharing nude AI-generated pictures of other students at a Beverly Hills middle school has led to a police investigation.
So it used to be you needed hundreds and thousands of images. Now you need a single image of somebody, and that's been about in the last year. There is zero barrier to entry now. You don't need skill, you don't need money, you don't need time, and you don't need effort.
And under the current Washington state law, if someone's image is used to make pornographic content without their consent, there's no legal recourse, which is why last month, 15-year-old Caroline felt compelled to testify on behalf of her friends to support a bill that will change that.
I'm just glad that now it might become a law, so it will ensure that things like this won't happen again.
Now, I find this from a legal perspective, I find it very interesting. Of course, I see the point with children and minors, but in general, is this not literal free speech that is being exercised here? I'm speaking a prompt. It is creating a caricature. It is.
Yeah, it's not my fault. You know, you can also say, why doesn't the company who produced the image, in other words, some system, some website, something sent you the image. They're the ones responsible. Now, in the olden days, when I was a kid, and if you go back to the 70s, pornography was generally illegal. It wasn't until Clinton came around that all of a sudden laws got relaxed.
Yeah, they sure did.
But then pornography used to be illegal.
But I guess my point is, so what if they want to put your head on the body of a dog or of a chimpanzee? Oh no, if we put a black person's head on the body of a chimpanzee, I mean, where does the law go? Is it only about nude picture? And it's obviously not that person. It's just their head. Does Taylor Swift have a case? I mean, what are we really trying to do? I don't want to sound, I'm not trying to sound like a creep, like, oh, it's good to do this. But at a certain point,
What fun, kids.
Where do you stop? I mean, where does it stop? How far can this go?
Well, we're going to find out during this next election cycle.
Yeah. You're right. And none of it's good.
Because it's going to be pretty gross by the time we get to, I'd say, September, October.
I'm going to have a lot of this going on.
We're going to have some stuff that is going to be hilarious, to say the least.
Well, you bring that up, but yes, part two of this clip series.
Now, that bill in Washington State that Caroline testified for is expected to be voted on later today on the state Senate. If that passes, like it did unanimously in the House, it will go to the governor to become law. But again, this is one state, and the internet is stateless. It's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have to tell you, we're election year.
Yes.
There are a lot of bad actors out there. How can you protect yourself?
Well, it's scary, and there really is no silver bullet solution here. A number of these companies have come together and said they're going to work towards misinformation. But the bottom line for a consumer of information, every person who is watching right now, is that you really do have to be skeptical. I often say buyer beware in my stories. Mm-hmm. And the reality is the buyer has to beware here, too. You have to think about who's the source. Where did this thing originate? How is it being used? And be skeptical and seek out more information. If you see the one image on someone's Facebook or Instagram or Twitter page, look and see where else it's coming from. How did it begin?
Oh, yes. This is good information. Thank you. It's very helpful. I don't know, man. We got parades where everyone's dancing around naked, looking like men, looking like women, women looking like men. It's all good. It's encouraged. It's great. And then, oh, we have someone prompted. It's horrible. It's disinformation. Calling Dylan Mulvaney a woman, that's disinformation. There's your disinformation. Admiral Levine, disinformation. That's confusing to children. Yeah, who am I?
Yeah.
Who am I?
As you like to put it, you have the phrase, dude in a dress.
Dude in a dress, yes. I have two more fun stories. And this one, let me see, I think I have, yes, the series from NBC. I think this really tells you where we're at in our economy with our intake, our food, what we eat, what we're concerned about in life. And this is the dynamic pricing at Wendy's.
Oh, yeah. By the way, this has become a baseline issue for most news networks at this point. And it came up, I was watching some stuff this morning, and it came up with, I guess, Burger King is going to start dynamic pricing. This is, to me, just before you play the clips, this is the least expected clips I would predict. I think dynamic pricing is a way to to make an excuse for deflation.
Thank you. This exactly. This is an economic issue. I'm thinking that these.
Let me say this: deflation is the world's is the most dangerous word in finance.
Most dangerous thing you can have.
Super dangerous.
Mm-hmm. How dangerous?
Super duper dangerous.
Yes. Now, I believe the morning shows are only talking about this because they're paid. These are advertisements. It could be trial balloons for these companies, but here's the story.
The latest Baconator isn't the only new item hitting Wendy's menu. The fast food giant planning to test out dynamic pricing as early as 2025. It's a practice that charges different prices for the same items based on demand throughout the day. For example, a cheeseburger and fries could cost you more during the lunch rush than during a down period.
I would never expected a fast food restaurant to do that.
On a call with investors, Wendy's CEO Kirk Tanner says his company will invest $20 million on digital menu boards, allowing customers to see the updated prices.
Beginning as early as 2025, we will begin testing more enhanced features like dynamic pricing and daypart offerings, along with AI-enabled menu changes and suggested selling.
Fast food.
Wait, is this just an AI play? Is this Wendy's like, hey man, let's get our stock up. Tell them we're going to use AI for dynamic pricing. Genius, boss. This is great.
Changes and suggestive selling.
Fast food restaurants already dealing with blowback on soaring prices from their customers as stories of $18 Big Macs and $7 Egg McMuffins at McDonald's went viral. Now adding dynamic pricing to the mix could potentially be damaging to the industry.
I don't think anyone's going to pay extra for the exact same thing that they were getting for less.
In fact, one survey finding 36% of consumers would order less often from restaurants adopting the practice.
You'll have to be really careful about not angering consumers who are already kind of inflation-wary.
And that's actually what's made the industry very sort of hesitant to dive fully in. There are definite risks involved, and they really don't want to anger customers.
So the news program and models make an argument that our life is already filled with dynamic pricing.
But these fluctuating prices are nothing new to inflation-fatigued consumers who are used to seeing surging prices on everything from airlines to concert tickets, like Taylor Swift's Eras Tour Ticketmaster drama.
There's Taylor again.
Oh my gosh, we spent $899 per ticket. Dynamic pricing is the worst.
And rideshares like Lyft and Uber notoriously face backlash from consumers when riders see unexpected costs.
Usually Uber's like $8-$10. Tonight it was like 50 something bucks. Little did I know about surge price.
But experts say this is a rare move from the fast food industry, which has been hesitant to sink its teeth into varying prices.
This would be a big deal for restaurants if this was widely adopted.
And it's really going to depend on how customers react. If customers are okay with it, you'll see more of it. And if Wendy's test doesn't work for whatever reason, you might not see it that often.
Now, before I play the last clip, just explain why deflation is super duper bad.
The problem with deflation is that it kills a demand, because what happens is people say, well, I'll wait. The prices are going down. I'll wait until it gets down lower. I'm not going to buy today. I'll buy tomorrow. So it is a deflationary system creates such a slowdown in demand that it ruins economies. And so you don't want any deflation whatsoever. Now, with these restaurants, I think they can beat this negative publicity, because Uber and these other operations, which have this ballooning prices, by setting a top limit, because what they want to do is bring prices down.
Yeah, right.
And so what you do is you just set the max will always be this. Which is the normal price, will be the max,
and the fluctuating prices
will go down, not up ever. And if they get that message across, which they're not doing with these reports. But if they get that message across, then they can do what they want to do, which is lower prices. Now, I should mention that in some cities, San Francisco being one of them, they have this fluctuating prices on parking meters.
Ooh.
Now, the parking meters around Mevio, for example, when we were there, they would go up and down and up and down, depending on whether or not there was a Giants game, which was walking distance from the office.
That's right. I remember.
So if there was a Giants game, it would go from, 25 cents for a half hour to like $0.25 for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and you had to pump in about $6 worth of coins to park.
Yeah,
and this mechanism is everywhere.
So here's a thought for the lunch crowd. How about a brown bag? Can we bring the brown bag back? How about a PB&J you brought from home? And that's what we used to do, people.
So we reached out to Wendy's, telling us in a statement overnight this. Dynamic pricing can allow Wendy's to be competitive and flexible with pricing, motivate customers to visit, and provide them with the food they love at a great value.
Yes.
I mean, he's got a bad taste.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like we're constantly being taken advantage of as customers. Is it reasonable to believe that if Wendy's does this, that everyone else will follow suit?
It's a test that begins in 2025. We asked the other chains. We asked Burger King. We asked McDonald's. They didn't respond. But KFC said it has no plans at this time to try dynamic pricing on its menu. The fast food industry has been reticent to do this in the past. But we'll see if these new menu boards, dynamic menu board. Look, if the burger's cheaper later in the day, that might entice me, to be honest.
Right. No, but if you work a shift and your lunch hour is between 12 and 1 and you just have time to go grab a burger, and that's the time that they're the price the highest.
Yeah.
That would just be incredibly frustrating.
They're busiest, so it's slower and costs more.
I don't like it. I don't think of fast food like an airline ticket. I don't.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But that's the same kind of model. You're welcome. I am your fast food outrage correspondent.
There you go.
As Craig said.
Oh my God, what a bunch of windbags.
As Blitz points out in the troll room, both brown bags and PB&J have been declared racist by the Marxists. So I apologize for my deviant behavior. My goodness. Yeah, that's where we're at. All right. I'm sorry. I was going to do one more, just that not much discussed story, and then I'll let it go. How's that sound?
Okay, I only have three Hunter Biden clips just to keep us up.
All right, so this is the story we talked about on the last show. It's finally getting a little bit of press attention because people can't get their SSRIs and their Adderall and their Vyvanse and Lord knows what else. But there is...
What is Vyvanse? I've never heard of it until recently.
Oh, Vyvanse is the same compound... Oh, what are we drinking? Are you drinking
La Croix Pure?
La Croix. La Croix.
Yeah.
Pure.
La Croix.
La Croix Pure. Okay. So that's just mineral water, basically. Fancy mineral water.
Tap water. Come on.
Yes. So Vyvanse is the same compound as Adderall, only it is delayed release.
No, oh, please.
It lasts longer for extra flavor.
Yeah.
So here's the story, and then there's a subcontext which is not being discussed.
We're learning more about a cyber attack on a major health insurance company. It's causing big delays and frustrations for many Americans trying to get their prescription drugs. Here's ABC's Lana Moise.
This morning, nearly 1 week after a cyber attack hit the nation's largest health insurer, thousands of pharmacies are still facing disruptions, fulfilling prescription drug orders.
You potentially get into life and death scenarios where patients can't gain health care, or in this case, patients can't gain access to prescription medication.
The attack crippled Change Healthcare's digital network, which is a part of United Healthcare. The company says it took immediate action to prevent further impact. Pharmacies use Change's network to verify insurance coverage.
And if you have a very expensive medication, you might be stuck in a position where you have to pay cash in order to get it, at least temporarily.
Times are hard these days, and something like that, I mean, I'm sure that would impact a family.
Initial reports said actor could be to blame for the cyber attack, but Reuters now reports the infamous ransomware gang Black Hat may be responsible.
Why are they so concerning?
So Black Hat is the same organization that took down MGM and Caesars Entertainment. That was very, very damaging to those organizations.
Cyber criminals are increasingly targeting healthcare systems. Earlier this month, a cyber attack on a Chicago hospital shut down phones and computers. With this latest attack, a pharmacy near Pittsburgh is using the honor system, giving patients their meds now and billing insurance later.
It's also risky, is you're going to process a claim, and are you, whenever the insurance is back up and running, are we actually going to get paid what we should get paid for that prescription?
Large pharmacy chains like Walgreens and CVS are reporting only a limited impact from this attack, but it's the smaller pharmacies that have been most affected. Many have switched to paper processing, which is causing delays and backlogs.
Yeah, so this is not good. Now, what is not discussed is, and it's unclear if this is Black Cat or Lockbit, but this, of course, would be the Russians, obviously. They say that they have a whole bunch of interesting documents relating to the Donald Trump trial that they're going to release if the ransom is not paid. This is not discussed very much, even though Washington Post reporter Brian Krebs wrote a blog post about it. He has not published it in the Washington Post at this hour.
Well, what was the indication that these documents revealed?
The stolen according to Brian Krebs, a WAPO reporter on his blog, February 24th letter, the stolen documents contain a lot of interesting things in Donald Trump's court cases that could affect the upcoming U.S. election. Ooh. So we'll see. But there's not a lot of reporting on that.
Well, that means it must be something must against be Joe Biden.
It must be good, is what it means.
I mean, it's probably like direct correspondence between the Justice Department, Biden White House, there and some of there these court go. Cases.
Yeah.
And they've got the documents to prove that they were in
collusion. Collusion!
Collusion, exactly. Because otherwise this would be, this is an example of why we have to do a podcast like this. What you pointed out is the mainstream media will not report on anything that is favorable to Donald Trump.
No. Why would you?
No, they don't want him. Even though they make money. But it's not about the money. It's about the socialism.
Yes. What is it about? Socialism. That's right. Okay, let's do your Biden clips so we can be
all right, this is to catch us up with the Hunter Biden his supposed
deposition
testimony and whether it's good or bad. Here we go. Hunter Biden news. This is NTD.
Today, after months of anticipation, Hunter Biden appeared before Congress to testify in the impeachment inquiry into President Biden. Our Washington correspondent, Luis Martinez, joins us live now with more on the probe.
Good evening, Tiffany. Yes, another big day in Capitol Hill. Today, this morning, around 10 a.m., Hunter Biden appeared the O'Neill House office building to testify before the House Oversight Committee. The deposition is part of the impeachment inquiry against President Biden. Let's remember that House Republicans are accusing the president of using his political influence to enrich his family members. It's important to note, Tiffany, that Hunter Biden was originally scheduled to be deposed on the 13th of December of last year. But on that day, Hunter Biden, instead of showing up to his scheduled interview with the House Oversight Committee, he took to the steps of Capitol Hill to make a political statement defending his father, demanding a public hearing, and also vowing never to participate in a closed doors deposition, which of course he did today for over 7 hours. What changed was that the House Oversight Committee passed a resolution holding in contempt Hunter Biden. And before that resolution could get to the floor of the House, Hunter Biden's lawyers reached out to the Oversight Committee to schedule today's interview. Now, we spoke with Hunter Biden got around the behind closed doors interview by releasing before entering into the interview his opening remarks. In his opening remarks, Hunter Biden defends his father once again, refutes any allegations that he had to do anything with his business dealings, and he also attacked the Republican Party. And I read a quote from his opening remarks. "You do not have evidence to support the baseless and MAGA motivated conspiracies about my father because there isn't any."
I like MAGA motivated.
Yeah, I love MAGA motivated.
There's nothing like alliteration to punch your point home. MAGA motivated. Yes.
Part two.
Congressman James Comer, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, who's leading the impeachment inquiry, had something very different to say about the amount of evidence they have against President Biden. Let's listen to what James Comer, chairman of the House Oversight Committee, had to say.
Our committees have unearthed substantial evidence of President Biden and his family's corruption. The Bidens created 20 shell companies.
Now, Democrats have alleged along the process that the entire impeachment inquiry is political sham. Now, this calls have also revamped since Alexander Smirnoff, longtime FBI informant, was indicted earlier.
Hold on. The guy's name is Alexander Smirnoff? Seriously?
Yeah, why?
He's a Russian guy. He's a Russian spy. And his name is Smirnoff? Like a vodka?
Yeah, he's a vodka guy.
This is cartoon world, man.
Alexander Smirnoff, longtime FBI informant, was indicted earlier this month for lying to the FBI about information he provided regarding Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's business dealings. Now, I spoke with Democrat Congressman Greg Kassar from Texas, a freshman in the oversight
Marxist cuck
committee, and he had some very strong words against Republicans who insist on the impeachment inquiry even after Alexander Smirnoff was indicted. Let's listen to what Congressman Greg Kassar had to say.
I think almost any American would say, just stop embarrassing yourself. Stop shaming yourself this way. And they just seem to be gluttons for punishment. They're back at it again. And I think they're just going to embarrass themselves again today.
Oh, this guy, he was on the city council in Austin. He's like a Soros sister. Ugh.
Yeah.
He's no good.
No, all of these Democrats, and they go on and on about one thing or another. I don't have the clips about them all calling this a Russian hoax. But the Smirnoff thing, they're banking on that, claiming the whole thing.
Well, the name is great. I mean, it's great. It's Russian disinformation. Smirnoff. I mean, what more do you want to say? This is they got it locked.
Yeah, well, they definitely. I'll tell you this, the Republicans are weenies when it comes to getting this thing closed. I mean, when Nancy Pelosi was running the show, she said, okay, impeachment, we'll start tomorrow. Boom, right, go right to impeachment and let's get Trump because he showed up at a meeting. Anything they could do. This Comer guy is useless, but let's go to clip three.
I also spoke with Congresswoman Nancy Mace from South Carolina, and she herself had very strong words to say to her counterparts and Democrats' line of argument that looks or seeks to disqualify Alexander Smirnoff's indictment. Let's listen to what Congresswoman Nancy Mace had to say.
Of course, that's because we all know what the FBI said about this witness. They said that this witness was trustworthy and credible. They paid this witness six figures. So is the FBI that incompetent to pay this guy hundreds of thousands of dollars for him not to be credible, for him not to be trustworthy?
Just a few minutes ago, I spoke also with Congressman Pat Fallon from Texas, a Republican in the House Oversight Committee. He was there in the deposition with Hunter Biden. He spent the entire 7 hours of the deposition in the room with the rest of the Oversight Committee. And this is what Pat Fallon, Congressman from Texas, had to say.
He said Jim Biden gave his dad $200,000 as a loan repayment. Okay, then why hasn't your father simply produced the original check or wire that he sent to his brother? He hasn't. I don't think it ever existed, but it's things like that. So I think the natural progression will be a public hearing, and then we'll go from there.
Oh, boy.
They're going to go nowhere. These guys are, these Republicans are just, they're full of it themselves.
Yeah.
But they may, you know, they're going to try to, I don't know what they're even trying to accomplish, I mean, to be honest about it.
I understand why people are more interested in dynamic pricing at Wendy's. I mean, this is not a good show.
No, it's not working out.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courage. Say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in La Croix Naturelle. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C.
Well, in the morning to you, Mr. M. Curry. In the morning to all the ships in the sea and the boots on the ground, the feet in the air, the subs in the water, and all the dames and the knights out there.
And a big and hearty look in the morning to the trolls in the troll room. Hello, and look over here, trolls. There you go. It's a little better than last Thursday. Last Thursday, we had 1,556. We upped the ante by 10 to 1,565 trolls listening live as our live studio audience. We welcome all of them, of course. Happy to have trolls to troll, which is what they do. They've been funny this morning, though, doing lots of ISOs and all kinds of fun stuff and saying look a lot and write.
Look.
Yeah, it's Pavlovian. Whenever you hear a news report and it's and you hear look, all you can do is think time to donate to No Agenda. Or whenever you hear right, you think, wow, it's right. It's time to donate to No Agenda. Because we are a value for value podcast. Which means we give this all to you for free, gratis, no cost, no charge, no hoops, no levels, no tote bag, none of that. Yeah. No advertisement, no creepy corporate no money. No
closed off content.
None of that. Yeah. Which I really hope that the Dvorak Horowitz unplugged stock picks never get paywalled.
You've been listening again.
Yeah, because you were shorting into earnings again. I couldn't
believe it. Yeah, I shorted into earnings with Beyond Meats, and it went up by 14%, as Horowitz pointed out to me. He calls me up and says, you tell Curry he's full of crap. And then he gave me the example.
I know. Well, we'll see what it closes at today. I love listening to you guys. By the way, the trolls, you can join them at trollroom.io. That's we get the live stream. You can tune in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's always some cool podcast that's going live. Darren O'Neill does the pre-show for 2 hours before we get on the stream on Thursdays and Sundays. If you like Taylor Swift, Darren's your guy. If you like Madness, yeah. Darren's your guy. If you like Bowie, Darren's your guy.
Old Billy Idol stuff. Yeah. That, you know, you haven't Darren's heard for
guy.
Decades.
And if you like Weird Al Yankovic, Darren's your guy.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. It really is. Or you can listen in a modern podcast app. I'm going to promote a one app every single show because there's a lot. There's now 16 or 17 of them. These are all independent apps done by usually one or two guys on a team. It's important that you support them by using their apps. The apps are free. I think you can get some extra features for some of them, but it keeps podcasting free. It keeps idiots like Spotify away from podcasting. Keep it free and open. So Fountain is the app I am promoting on this show.
Oh, yeah, it's a good one.
Fountain is a very good app. They just started a music radio station in there, too. It's all kinds of good stuff. Now, back to the value for value. You can support us in many different ways. Treasure is a big one, and we do need the treasure of time, talent, and treasure, but time and talent count as well. You can organize a meetup, you can hit somebody in the mouth, you can promote us, there's so many things that you can do. Be a boots on the ground, send us a clip, make some art. There you go. The artists deliver such incredible value to this podcast. As an example, for episode 1637, we titled that one LIDAR. Thanks, everybody, for explaining what LIDAR is. I think we kind of know what it's like. You don't understand LIDAR. It's like radio, like radar, but with a light, with laser. Yeah.
You got the frequency. It's got more granularity. And somebody went on and on. I said, how much granularity, how much detail do you need when you're talking about the dirt, you know? You're trying to hit the ground, you know. You don't need within, millimeters.
Well, LIDAR
and then it still fell over, missed a rock.
LIDAR is what's killing everybody in those self-driving cars. You know, it's great stuff.
And also it's blinding. You know, that you should never look up at the blinding thing at the top.
It's not blinding. It's infrared. Yeah. You don't see it.
Yeah, whatever. It's not good for the eyes.
We want to thank Francisco Scaramanga, who is on a roll. His wife still doesn't understand what this value for value thing is because he gets paid nothing. He just gives us back value and loves it. He loves the show and gives us back value by creating dynamite artwork. He really is on a roll. And
he's been hitting it.
And this was so good. This was an astronaut apparently on the moon with a golf club, which is, remember, our U.S. astronauts were on the moon driving the dune buggy around the lunar.
Right, and they had a golf club hitting golf balls back in 1971.
Bouncing up and down. And now we can't even land the thing upright. And the golf club is trying to kill some alien, some pink alien that's roaming around. It was great. It was really a funny piece. Let me see what else we had. Let's go to noagendaartgenerator.com. Another great piece of value Sir Paul Couture has made made for us and for the program. Let's see.
I used the moon tripping from Dirty Jersey Whore for the news.
Now that came in late. I don't think we saw that one when we were picking the art.
I don't think so either, but I used it anyway.
Because it would have been a discussed piece. It's hilarious. I saw it on the newsletter. It was very, very good. Other pieces were, let's see, Toxic Trump, which was all right. That was Parker Pauly, Black Knight Parker Pauly, which was the patented Trump hair swoosh. We did talk for a bit about Dame Kenny Benz. In fact, we said we would discuss this as the runner up with the "We're All Gonna Die."
You really liked it. You liked this piece a lot.
Yeah, the "You Were All Gonna Die" guy with the SOS phone and his hair's on. You know, it's freaking out. It was a nice piece. It was a good piece.
Yeah, it was definitely a good piece. It could have been picked if the other piece didn't exist.
Yes, I think both of them might have lost to the Dirty Jersey Whore. That's a funny piece.
Yeah, maybe.
You should have gotten it in earlier. I don't know. That's too bad. Thank you all very much, artists. And of course, thank you, Francisco Scaramanga. We'll see what everyone has in store for us today. I can already see there's about 12 submissions. You can follow along at noagendaartgenerator.com or in that fountain app I was talking about. You can find it in your app store, your Google Play store. We have chapters, which Dreb Scott makes for every single show, and he puts all the artwork in there. As much as he can use, he'll put in there, and you'll see that rotating. If you're driving in your car, you got Android Auto or CarPlay, it'll swap right there on your screen. It's kind of fun. Now, let us thank some of the people who brought us the treasure for episode 1638. And we start off with Sam LeMay from Bedford, Kentucky, with the magic number 333.33. He says, "No note, no karma. Thank you for your courage." Thank you, Sam LeMay. Beautiful, short, sweet. We love it.
Yeah, it was nice. Sir Turkey is up with from Los Angeles, California, 333.33, and he says, "Dead Podfathers." I think he meant deer.
I would hope so.
"Please give jobs karma and also health karma, Sir Turkey."
You got it.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You saw karma.
And we keep it in the 333s. Adam Ruiz is from Sealy, Texas, although he says, "I'm planning on moving back to the U.S. after living in China for the last 5 years. Wow. I need some jobs karma for my smoking hot wife, and I also just turned 33 a few months ago, so I thought it'd be appropriate to donate 333. Thank you, Adam and John." Yes, here it comes.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You got karma.
Mr. Michael G. Breuer in Glend Osmond, South Australia, 333. No note that I can find. And so we'll just give him a double up, karma, and maybe he'll send something in.
You've got double up karma.
Jake Harvey, our first associate executive producer, under 300, between 2 and 300 is associate executive producer. These are real titles, by the way. We'll talk about that in a minute. He's from Fort Worth, Texas, 263.22. And he says, "I'm a Texan. I'm a welder. I'm a father. I'm a husband." 4 for 4, brother. "Been giving 33.33 a month since April of 2020. Switcheroo for my wife, who finally started listening after multiple hits to the mouth. Dame Laura of the North Texas Shenanigans. Learned of No Agenda from the Presby cast when they played the BS COVID commercials, all sounding the same. I wondered where my people were, and I found them with you two weirdos. Much love." And Dame Laura of the North Texas Shenanigans will get the switcheroo. Happy to do that for you, Jake.
And then we move to Brendan Maroney. in Browns Mills, New Jersey. 24209. ITM gents, please do find my donation of $229.92 plus PayPal fees as a humble gesture of thanks. Thursday will be my.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Has PayPal started adding that for some reason, saying, would you like to pay
you click?
But is that new? Because people.
No, it's been around for. I never implemented it.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Because I always thought it was like, I don't know. It's kind of chicken shit, But then I put it up to see what would happen about
and people 6 like months doing ago. It. Yeah.
Some people do. Yeah.
That's very nice.
And so you just tick a box and it's boom. I think they introduced it about 2 years ago.
Tick a box and boom.
Tick a box and boom. Tick a box. Thursday will be my 8th birthday on these here latest 32 trips around the sun. And I was punched in the mouth a few months back. I should get on with the de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
For my quadannual birthday, which I guess is 40. It is hard to believe that the last time I had the day to celebrate the powers to be, we're figuring out the best way to start the demolition of our global economy. His sentence structure is hard to read.
Yeah.
My commute has significantly increased recently, and I've rediscovered the medium of podcasts. After a bit of a hiatus, I must shout out to the Tom Woods Show for my early education of libertarianism and contrarianism over a decade ago. But if I had been listening to your show back in early COVID times, I would have been much more confident in explaining to my bought in friends exactly how they were being hypnotized by the M5M and why I was so skeptical of the nonsense they were rolling out in 2020 and beyond. Very extremely long sentence. I'll wrap up after deleting much of this original note for brevity, really.
Right.
I just want to say thanks. By the way, that could be a period, not a comma. I just want to say thanks for your insights and keep up the good work. I recently moved to a new house and new home with my slightly less new wife. I married last September and will be entering the third year of running decently successful business with my father. I think there are pretty millennial things for me to finally get to. So I believe some millennial karma, heard it on Sunday's episode, should do me some good. If you're feeling generous, sincerely appreciate you too, Brendan.
Millennial karma.
You've got karma.
Long note, Brendan. Yes. Mike Rinneker is in Dubuque, Iowa, 24147. Gentlemen, thank you. It's a leap year donation. 229.33 plus fees. Mike Rinneker. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate it.
Brian Telecki. I think it's Telecki. In Lincoln, Nebraska, 24137. A 229.24 leap year donation before PayPal fees. Boom. That's it. That's the note.
Seth Tandet, Richmond, Virginia. Row of Ducks, 222.22. Row of Ducks, as I enjoy duck hunting. Donating on behalf of the Concrete Logic podcast. Please refer to message I forwarded to John regarding Stripe. Yes, we got that. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. I'll do this one.
Okay.
This is because it's in Dutch. Well, unless you want to read it.
No, I'll just butcher it.
Mark Blaeveld in Haddam, Connecticut, 210.60. Hope in bange dagen is what jullie zijn. Please keep it up. Would you like a translation?
Yes, I think everybody would.
Hope in bange dagen. Hope, as in hope, H-O-P-E. Hope in scary times is what you are. We are the hope in the scary times.
Says nice. Hoop.
Yes. You write it as hoop, but it's hope.
Hoop.
It's hope. And it's
Gigawatt
funny.
Coffee Roasters in Bensonville, Illinois came in with 201.43, and they also sent some coffee and some of the canned coffee, which is enough to keep you awake.
Oh, I haven't received mine yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Send him some cans. That's what he likes.
Yeah, I do. I like the cans.
Cans. He has a note. JCD and Adam, love the Grimerica interviews. Hats off to Darren and Graham for helping keep freedom alive in Canada.
Canada.
For producers in need of a better way to start the day, taste the air roasted difference and visit gigawattcoffeeroasters.com and use code ITM20 for 20% off your coffee order. Stay caffeinated. Eli the coffee guy. I will say that their coffees are good, but it's amazing. Their canned coffee is, which is different than any other canned coffee I've had, is really, I think, quite a good product.
So I'm a
black. I usually pour it into you can pour it into a half a glass, put some milk in there, maybe a little sweetener if you want, because it's just black coffee. But it's really well made. I have to give him credit. Kudos for the coffee maker.
So I'm a black rifle guy, and I ran out, and I still had stuff that they sent me. I like those little pouches they have, little tester pouches. Did you get those?
Maybe.
Yeah, they have little tester pouches, about good for two pots of coffee. It's great, and it tastes good. I was drinking it this morning because I'm out of my black rifle. So thank you guys. Adam Carter, $200, associate executive producer. Shout out to Aaron C. of the Clown Town Chronicle, a new media deconstruction podcast a la No Agenda. We may not be as experienced as John and Adam, but we're doing our part all the same. Clown Town is burning, and we are here to watch. Are you? All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks, bros.
Well, we got another Linda Lupatkin. She shows up every show.
She does.
We'll see how long this goes on. Like, and she should take some Dutch. I guess she's the Duchess of Jobs Karma. Lakewood, Colorado, $200. And same, she wants some jobs. Karma for competitive edge, she writes, go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. That's Imagemakers Inc. with a K. But just find Linda Lupatkin on the list of producers. Duchess of Jobs and writer of resumes, and she's on the producers list.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
You've got karma.
And we have Dame Trish with $200, and she sends in a typewritten note. Well, maybe that was printed on the computer. And it says, hello, John. Adam, go pound sand. I'm not even on the note. Here's a much-needed donation for the show. This donation is for my son-in-law, Stephen, who, thank God, hit me in the mouth in the early days of COVID. This will help with his knighthood. I'm also enclosing the facts for the NA site as previously promised. We should get those up.
I have them. Yeah, I'm going to go. I want to apologize to Dame Trish. I'm the roadblock to this. I am the laggard. It's my fault this hasn't been implemented and already gone through two or three iterations as I failed Dame Trish. That's why she sent me the note. The note's directed at me for being a slouch.
Well, she's being very kind about it. She says,
I can read between the lines.
She said, oh, she's nice. I emailed these to you sometime last year, but never received any feedback.
Yeah, because the email's lost in the shuffle.
So here they are, old school, printed out. If these aren't the sort of questions you had in mind, just tell me, and I'll cease and desist. I hope to hear from you soon. Email works, or give me a call on the landline. How about a little goat scream, Karma? Thank you very much, Dame Trish of Detroit. We love you. That's fantastic. Appreciate it.
You've got Karma.
And that wraps up our executive and associate executive producers for episode 1683 on this extra free day of the year. Can you believe it? 9 shows in 1 month, and we're happy to do it for you. These execs and associate executive producers, you get these titles are real. They're forever. You can keep them for as long as you want to be attached to it. And you can use it on your LinkedIn profile, your resume, your socials, whatever you want to do, or go to imdb.com. You'll see that we have over 1,000 executive producers. There's like some guy who I don't remember is like somehow he's at the top of the list. We got to look into IMDb. But it's very weird. You can, show off to all your friends. Look, I'm an actual producer. Oh, yeah? You don't believe me? Check out imdb.com. I'm on that. What? Yeah. John's going to take us through to the 50s as we thank the rest of our producers above the line for this episode.
Yes, we're going to start off with Linda Wiegert Wiegert in Maplewood, Minnesota, 16333. But she did send a check and a note, and I do want to read this note because this is another note. kind of, I don't know if it's very an insult or not.
Interesting. I'm not sure if it's an insult or not.
I was walking through a Hobby Lobby and saw this Valentine, and I immediately thought of John. And it's a little figure. It's like a Valentine's card, only it's on a piece of wood, and it's got, it stands up.
Oh.
It's cute. Oh. It's very cute.
Cool.
She says, I immediately thought of John, not because I'd like him to be my Valentine.
No, God forbid. No,
screw that.
No.
But because he usually puts vintage Valentines in the newsletter. I also thought it was a sign to donate again, enclosed my check and the Valentine. He says, she goes on to say, I consider my physical, mental, and spiritual health all very important. And I spend a fair amount of money on all three. Your podcast contributes immensely to my mental health.
Wow.
All right.
And she did have an interesting jingle request, which I looked up for her. The backup to the backup to the backup from the Iowa election results.
A backup and a backup to that backup and a backup to the backup to the backup.
I'm glad you asked for that one. I'd forgotten all about it. It was great.
I forgot all about it, too.
Thanks, Lynn. It's great.
Anyway, well, thanks for the Valentine. I appreciate it. And it's now standing in the knickknack shelf.
Yes.
And as you can imagine, I have a lot of knickknacks.
You know, a knickknack meister.
Yeah, meister. Rick Owens, St. Petersburg, Florida, 10535. Jared Smith's on the list at Fort Wayne, Indiana, 10101. Sydney Winter in Lincoln, Nebraska. He's got a birthday and $100 and it's for Trenton. His wife's wishing him a happy birday. Nancy Samuelson, 100. Anonymous in Columbus, Ohio, 100.
Wait, so what happened to Sydney? Sydney, de-douching. There's a de-douching there.
Oh, I didn't see the de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
And we go to Anonymous for 100 from Columbus, and then we have the blank donor from San Diego, California, 100. This has happened a couple of times.
Where's PayPal? They haven't donated recently.
Yeah, they'll be coming in soon. Christian Grulich.
In
Lakeland, Grulich. Ohio.
Grulich. Yes,
it's pronounced Grulich, John.
Yes.
8438. Fees included. Herb Lamb in Sugar Hill, Georgia. 8008.
Sir Herb.
Sir Herb, yeah. Sir Herb. Kevin McLaughlin's, here he is, 8008. He's the boob man. Feel for lumps. Save your bumps. he's the Duke of Luna.
He is.
Danielle Williams in Weed, California.
He's the Archduke of Luna, actually.
8008, Archduke.
You misgendered him.
Thanks for your outstanding work, she writes. And thank you to the Duke of Luna. And Sir Onimus, she's thanking them for their contributions that are continuous.
Oh.
Oba to Twins Lost in Austin. Not sure what Oba means, but they're in Oklahoma City, 7777. Brian Kaufman in Scottsdale, Arizona, 7575. Dina Carroll in Laughlin, Nebraska. Laughlin, Nevada, 7227.
Wait, is it Nevada or Nevada? I'm confused now.
Nevada.
Okay.
It's so never Nevada.
No. Just want to make sure we're doing it right because, you know, Mimi gets angry.
Oh, yeah. No, if she hears Nevada, she'll be on the phone.
Yes.
Diane, Northumberland, UK, got a birthday.
Hey, wait. This is 6611. This is the Double Balls, Two Dicks. Isn't that, we got to make sure we do the donation right.
6611 double, yeah.
Yes, and she wants a biscuit for her birthday.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
Happy to do it.
We got
to
do that.
Happy to do it.
Craig Kohler in Evansville, Indiana, 5502. Jamie Buell in Vista, California, 6006, small boobs. Sir Pauly Bravo in Greeley, Colorado, 5567. Sir Srinivas Murthy. Murthy's our Brahmin. He's parts unknown in this list. 5558, and he's always given us grief on the network. I don't know if he's on the new social network. Sir Shelfwood in Imuden.
He says, greetings from Gitmo Nation Lowland, Sir Shelfwood of the Wooden Shelves in the Woods, Imuden, which is the new crime capital of North Holland. Good to know.
Yeah, if you want to get crime.
crime.
Sir Dan the Quiet Man in Alpharetta, Georgia, 5510. Colin Ayers in Blissfield, Michigan, 5510. Another birthday. We got a lot of birthdays.
And he says he's never been deduced.
You've been deduced.
Brian Richardson, Aurora, Illinois. A bunch of talking about tornadoes. 5345. Anonymous in Cary, North Carolina, 5272. Sumitra Saravana, 5272. Guns and Awareness in Livermore, Colorado. Guns and Awareness in Livermore, Colorado, 5272. Dean Owen in Carstairs, Alberta, Canada, 5272. War in Tees. War N. War is the word war. N. N. The letter N. Tees. War in Tees. Get it?
Nice.
And it's actually warintees.com in Essex, Maryland. 5272, Anonymous in Anchorage, Alaska, 5271. Andrew Berselli in Calgary, Alberta. Ah, the Albertans are in town. 5167, Scott Nelson in Council Bluffs, Iowa, 5001. And now these are $50 donors. Name a location. I'll do them. Name a location. For Scott Brinkley, Christianburg, Virginia. Shauna Norberg, Seattle. Brian Emmenheiser in Lancaster, California. Jack Schofield in Yankeetown, Florida. John Taylor in Florissant, Colorado. Aaron Weisgerber, Bend, Oregon. Richard Gardner, I believe he's in New York.
Sir.
Michael Elmore in Gastonia, North Carolina. Zev Green in Teaneck. Jay Alvarez in Meriden, Connecticut. Ray Howard in Kremling, Colorado. David Steele in Mobile, Alabama. Justin Kaler in Bluffton, Indiana. Anonymous in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. JRE donation, de-douching needed.
You've been de-douched.
Oh, he says, thanks for all the baby-making, Karma. My boy's 1 month old. All right.
Congrats. Leif Thompson in Meridian, Idaho. And last but not least, our Baron up there in Beaverton, Oregon, Alan Bean. And he's sent me an interesting note recently. I wanted to acknowledge that. And thanks, Alan. And this is our group of producers for show 1638.
Good showing. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate y'all showing up, especially the executive and associate executive producers. You get the titles, as we discussed earlier. Those are real titles. If anyone questions them, just send them to us. We will gladly vouch for you. We don't read anything under 50 for reasons of anonymity. We see the 49.99s. Thank you. And as always, thank you all very much, those of you on sustaining donations. These mean a lot. They really matter. And of course, keep track of your donations. Before you know it, you become a knight. It does happen more often than you think. Go to noagendadonations.com. Again, thank you to our execs and associate execs for producing episode 1638.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order. Shut up, Slade.
Shut up, Slade. It's your birthday,
And we have a birthday list short today, though. Colin Ayers turns 44 today. Diane will be turning 44 tomorrow. Hey, Colin Ayers, man. So are you 44 or 444? Born on Leap Day. How about that? And Sydney Winter wishes her husband, Trenter Winter, a very happy birthday. We say happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. No title changes, no knights, no dames, straight to the meetups.
No agenda meetup.
You know, we were talking earlier about the search generation. But I think the search generation really is just looking for connection. And you can get that. Any age, any race, background, religion, color, gender, whatever. You're all welcome at a no agenda meetup. It really is your tribe. It's your people. going out, then connect with them. It does give you protection. And there's one take. Well, actually, there's a couple taking place today. The North Georgia Monthly Meetup, 6 o'clock at Cherry Street Brewing, Alpharetta, Georgia. And the Denver Leap Year Day Meetup. This is only happens once every 4 years, this meetup, at Bar 404 in Denver, Colorado. That's a funny name for a bar. On Saturday, the local 483 International Brotherhood of Mouth Hitters will come together at 11:30 in the morning at Earth Fair of West Ashley in Charleston, South Carolina, the new Detroit San Fran meetup. 1 o'clock at Southern Pacific Brewing in San Francisco, California. The second annual Texas Chili meetup, 2 o'clock in Casa de Loca, Smithville, Texas. Excuse me, that's Dame Black Dame Loca. Very cool at her house, I guess. Sadly, the Kilkenny, Ireland meetup has been canceled. No reason why, but we're sorry to hear that. Would have loved to have had a meetup report from Ireland. But on Saturday, the Spun Up meetup in Switzerland, Zurich, at Oscar Kowalski. Oscar Kowalski, that's Sir Swiss Senna is organizing. He's been a producer for many, many years. Always a good time with Sir Swiss Senna. Jazz Hands, Jazz Feet, Beats Edition, 8 o'clock on Saturday at the Green Lady Lounge in Kansas City, Missouri. And the Don't Be a Douchebag meetup at 5:30 at McNally's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's just a partial list of all of the meetups that are taking place. We are around the world. We're international. We're bad. We're nationwide. Go to noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one, start one yourself. It's easy and always a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you won't be triggered or held to blame. You want to be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
Okay. I have a couple. I have a couple of ISOs. You want to hear?
Good. It's about time.
That was interesting.
Ooh, not bad. And then we have this one.
100%.
We're not using 100%.
And how about this one? I kind of like that one myself.
I do like that one.
Yeah. What you got?
Okay, I've got actually one. This one of them might be a good combination with your first one.
Oh.
It would be that was interesting, followed by. But let's try this one first. Dino. Oh, I got the wrong list. Where did my list go?
No. Bye-bye? Bye-bye? I have bye-bye.
No. The bye-bye would go second. Play the other one.
The most entertaining political podcast ever.
Huh?
I don't like that it was sped up.
Then try bye-bye.
Did you do that? Did you do the speeding up?
No, I did not. I got it from one of our producers.
Bye-bye.
So play your first clip.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then bye-bye.
That was interesting. Bye-bye.
That's a win. That's a winning combo. I can't. When you're right, you're right. That's it.
When you're right, you're right.
When you're right, you're right. Here we go.
Good news. Give me that good news. Good news. All I need is good news. Good news. Give me that good news, JCD.
Come on, JCD, give me the good news. You got some good news? Do we have any good news? This is
yes,
to get
definitely.
Everybody into the rest of your life. You just need to have a little bit of good news. There's nothing wrong
yes,
with
this.
Yes,
this is news. Out of a number of ones. The one I wanted to get was Curry the Turtle.
Yeah.
But
what
happened? Couldn't get a good.
Oh, that's too bad.
It was one of those websites that wouldn't play the video.
Oh.
But Curry the Turtle. Instead, I got Pojo the Pig.
Finally tonight, a Parker County pig rescue. Pojo the Pig there is safe and sound tonight after nearly a dozen rescuers helped free him from some thorny bushes in Springtown. Marilena Cooper tells us about a week ago, she and a worker from 5150 Farm and Rescue rushed to the site to rescue him. But after 2 hours of trying, he wasn't budging. So they put out the call for help on social media and even offered an incentive.
I'm a woman of my word. Like, man, if you can help me catch this pig, like, I will give everybody beer and everybody money.
And within 30 minutes, Cooper says 11 people showed up. It still took about 3 hours to free Pojo. And despite a possible spinal injury, we're told he's doing just well. Beer and money.
There you go.
Works every time.
Glad he's home.
That sounds like a no agenda meetup. With
beer and money
with Pojo the Pig.
Good news.
Good news indeed. It's good news, everybody. You can go into your the rest of your day feeling good about yourself, feeling good about the pig, and just feeling good about making it all the way through to the end of show here on episode 1683, where we have dynamite end of show mixes, Professor Jay Jones, Hugh Allison, Steph Jacobson, and you do not want to touch that dial because we have the Battle of the Dead Douchebags coming up next, live with Larry Blender, Lavish, Noah, and Sir Seeksitter. How could you even consider touching the dial? It's going to be dynamite. When those dead douchebags battle, you know hilarity ensues.
Dead douchebags.
Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country, where it is about 45 degrees right now. It's FEMA region number 6. It's the heart of the Texas Hill Country. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where it's 56 degrees, but the rain's about to hit. I'm waiting. I'm John C. Dvorak.
Remember us at noagendadonations.com. Thank you for being here. We'll talk to you on Sunday. Until then, adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such.
And let's get to Victoria Nuland so we can really get the BS up at the highest level possible with her crap.
Emotionally, psychologically, intellectually, or ethically.
This is what he
likes the word toxic. Well, I like toxic, by the way. It's a good word.
And here is the money shot.
And, you know, fuck the EU.
Religious cult meme.
You have to be in the throes of some sort of toxic delusion.
What evil and sin does to your overall look.
Help them reform and become a more European democratic country. And, you know, fuck the EU.
Well, I like toxic, by the way. It's a big word.
We need to pass this money, and the American people broadly understand that. If we don't stop Putin in Ukraine, he will keep going. And, you know, fuck the EU.
And there it is. Oops.
This is what he likes the word toxic.
After they have heard from Ukraine, they have heard from Europe, but this is not just about Ukraine. And, you know, fuck the EU.
I'm sorry. What am I thinking?
And I hope your Nuland clip has the money shot.
The bulk of this money is going right back into the U.S. economy.
He is by far the most disgraceful figure in modern presidential history.
What evil and sin does to your overall look. And there it is. Oops.
And, you know, fuck the EU.
So here's the unhinged part.
Because we've got to staunch this evasion.
Well, I like toxic, by the way. It's a good word. I'm sorry. What am I thinking?
I hope your Nuland clip has the money shot.
The bulk of this money is going right back into the U.S. economy. And, you know, fuck the EU.
And there it is. Oops.
Well, I like toxic, by the way. It's a good word. Are you going to fast for 40 days?
I don't think so. I'm not Jesus. No, see, we're fasting this week, so I was very productive.
What?
Fasting.
Why?
For Jesus.
What? When is that in the Bible? I don't know anything about fasting on this day of the year.
Well, no, it doesn't have to be this day of the year. Yes, Jesus fasted. Of course, for 40 days. What are you talking about?
You got all jacked up, so you're gonna do this now.
Yeah.
He is by far the most disgraceful figure in modern presidential history. He is a bubbling cauldron of loathsome traits. You have to be in the throes of some sort of toxic delusion and in a toxic cult to believe that Donald Trump has ever been emotionally, psychologically, intellectually, or ethically fit to be president of the United States.
These lights are so bright in my eyes that I can't see too many people out there. I can only see the black ones. I can't see any white ones.
All right, let's get to the news. God Almighty, here we go.
Last night, off camera at a fundraiser, President Biden called Vladimir Putin a, quote, crazy SOB.
My God. He even tweeted this video that God gave us Trump, who is nevertheless here on Earth to do God's work. So God tells him to steal a few elections to make him president. What you gonna do?
Moaning and whining and nagging about Trump. And we have to work with whoever is on the fence for us.
We've got to get Biden out of office.
I love him. He's a good man. Come up here, Liz.
Okay, you ready? America, the nightmare you're facing is just about over. Help is on the way.
It's a shame what is being done to him. The man is old.
The best podcast in the universe.
Mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Bye-bye.
That was interesting.